This episode of Weekend Confirmed is brought to you by the Gamefly app, the must-have app for gamers, with info on over 50,000 console, handheld, iOS, and PC games. Get the Gamefly app for free today on your iPhone, iPad, and Android devices.
T-minus 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0.
Weekend confirmed.
Ignition. Liftoff. Liftoff.
An awesome, awesome day to you, everybody. Thanks for joining us on the Weekend Confirmed show, where your feedback matters. We always pay attention to it. You know, your feedback really matters to us. And we try and respond to it and, you know, take the necessary actions to show that we value your participation, just like Microsoft.
Indeed.
My name is Garnet Lee. Have a great show coming up for you. You would not believe that E3 was only a week ago, but it was. You would know.
It feels like forever.
It does.
What's there to talk about this week?
I don't know.
Nothing to talk about.
So last week we tried to talk about games. I don't know. Maybe we'll talk about something different today. We'll come up with something, some distraction. That's Jeff Cannata, co-host extraordinaire, fantastic guy, always on Superstar.
Yes. It seems like an unfortunate name in the light of day, but still fun show.
Always on Superstar.
No, always on. But it's a very different show. If you guys haven't checked it out, check out CNET.com/always on. This week, actually, very fun episode. We went to Vail, Colorado, and I did a mud run, and you can see me muddy and hurting.
Well, you did a mud run. That's supposed to be really fun.
It was pretty fun, except the fact that
I have some friends who have friends like the legit thing where you like are actually running like a 5K or whatever, but it's like super muddy and you get crazy dirty.
Well, yes. This one was a run that had a little bit of mud at the end, and it was also in Vail, where there is, I don't know if you're aware of this, no air.
So yeah, well,
it's very difficult.
What is like 10, 12,000 feet?
Maybe? We were at 8150.
So you're at 8150.
Yeah.
You should have been at 5150.
Hey-o.
Hey. Also here from Shack News, our awesome senior editor who did a lot of E3 grunt work and cranked out a ton of stories and has more things to tell us about games that he saw there, Mr. Andrew Yoon.
Howdy.
And rocking the NASA shirt and still repping his Houston Astros, Dad of the Year, Christian Spicer.
Console Wars!
My new middle name, you guys.
All right, so we're gonna.
It is fun. I'm actually really happy to see this happen. It's been a while.
Console Wars.
So you guys will know that we actually do really read all that thing. I'll eat the mea culpa on a little bit of last week's show with the one disclaimer of, I don't think anyone in their right mind thought that Microsoft would reverse course inside of a week in such dramatic fashion.
Yeah.
So, I mean, last week
we had plenty of time to talk about that stuff.
Genuinely, last week when we made the decision, and I guess when I made sort of the decision as a captain to say, hey, we're going to talk about games because the games are the part that was really exciting. It was under the thought that, you know, okay, the games are right now, and it's the more E3 fades into the rearview mirror, the less those games are going to be interesting to people. And we're going to be talking about this crazy console fight all summer long. And then lo and behold.
And what happens is, we don't need to talk about this, but at the beginning of E3 week, all that shit goes down, and then the rest of E3 week, we're playing games,
yeah,
and we're all excited about those games we're playing, and that's the stuff that's sort of fresh on the palate.
But it was a big deal, and there were lots of notes there, but it was something I definitely figured we've got a week, a month, 3 months, 4 months to go back and really flog that story, because I fully anticipated, this is something we're going to have to talk about as well, that anybody, any big company that's had as many product launches as Microsoft has had, goes into making an announcement like they did with their eyes open.
Yeah.
But clearly
that's
they
what's
didn't.
So shocking.
Well, you'd think so, but like the Zune, the Ken phone or whatever the frick that phone. Ken phone, the Surface.
Oh my God, I totally forgot about
debut.
The Ken.
You can make a list. I'm not defending Microsoft, but you can make a list for any company that, you know, bonehead moves. But this seems like a level of bonehead that is beyond. So who got fired?
Is that a Windows logo on your shirt?
Yeah.
It's
hilarious.
Just on to check that in his wallet right now.
Yeah, right. It's hilarious when you guys make jokes and then people who listen don't realize they're jokes and take them seriously. Anyway, but let me just say right at the top, I want to do a mea culpa.
Jeff, you know I love you.
Yes. I'm under the bus is an act of love. I appreciate it.
I'm sorry, honey.
No, it's fine.
I'll cook dinner tonight.
You better. Okay, so let me just say mea culpa right off the top because I sat on this... in this very chair, on this very show, and said, let's not talk about it. This isn't going to happen. When these rumors were swirling, they're not going to do it. And I mean,
are you talking about months ago?
Months ago.
Oh, yeah. No, I didn't.
And I really want to say this and be very clear that I got it wrong. I got it way wrong. And
well, no, actually, we got it right. We got it right that it would be suicide to do that.
Right. But I didn't think that they would be stupid enough to actually go through with the idea of having to have a console check in. And now, at the time, we were talking about every 3 minutes,
yeah.
But even every 24 hours is ridiculous crazy. And the fact that they even got as far as they did with that policy is just staggeringly shocking to me and staggeringly stupid. But it's not because, like, oh, it's evil and DRM is bad and all that stuff. I'm saying any company that sets up a product to fail in certain ways, setting it up to turn itself off and not work as intended.
You could watch Blu-rays. Quit your complaining.
I don't understand why anybody would build in a fail state to a product that they're trying to sell to middle America.
It's roguelike. You know what I mean? It goes offline, you're dead. You have to start again.
It's so dumb. And I hope I'm clear enough about that. That was titanically dumb.
So here's one of the things that's interesting, and this is like a real distraction to the conversation. Don't worry, we're going to talk about it. I've got the press release right here. We got tons of time to talk about this stuff. Is this whole phenomenon amongst the games media audience where, I can't speak for other outlets. I genuinely can't speak for other outlets, but I felt like when we talked about it, we made it clear that this thing seemed so incomprehensibly tone deaf and a path of ruin.
It just didn't seem possible.
And so maybe we were premature to discount it. And maybe we were, you know, in hindsight, sure, we can look back now and go, well, you know, we really should have trusted that leaked marketing material, because as it was, that really was what they were planning to do. And the worst part of it all is if that's the case, as it seems very likely now that marketing proposal was probably a real leaked thing, then you have to figure probably Microsoft leaked it to see, you know, as you might do, to see like what sort of responses happen. And in spite of overwhelming, complete outrage over the whole concept of it, still plowed forward. Well, let's keep going right into the teeth of that storm.
But you know what? I don't fault them for keeping going. I fault them because they can do whatever the hell they want. But I fault them for not recognizing that they had to be better at fucking explaining it to people.
Well,
you know, like
maybe they didn't. You know what? Maybe they didn't have something good to explain.
Well, I think that's probably true. But also, like, to go into this initiative, and clearly, I wouldn't think that you would just go into this without a plan.
Well, that's I've told you both this privately, and I can say this. Anyone else asks me for more, I won't say. But like, I saw an email from very important people at Microsoft saying, after this stuff was leaked, saying there's no way this is that big of a deal, right? No one's going to care, right? And the reply was, why would they? I paraphrase some, so someone doesn't know.
I mean,
the exact
remember
like,
the tweet, the deal with it tweet. I mean, it seems like that,
oh, that,
actually,
that is the
that,
that
was actually
that is
I think
the great
that was actually
sin.
Representative of their attitude. And actually, I remember at the Xbox One reveal event up in Redmond, you know, they no one had any idea that this was being taken as negatively as it was. They were just so blind to
But that's that. The that's the great sin to me is the callousness with which they handled all of this, and the way that every question was A, not prepared for, and B, dismissed as if
the DRM's not just a switch we can turn off. It's built into the DNA of this. It's like, what the, just stop talking, stop saying stupid
And to
shit.
Be honest, like, that's the people complaining, that's kind of how I was on this show, dismissing it out of hand. It's just because it seemed so improbable to me that this would we would even get this far with it.
Yeah, on the face of it, it seemed so blatantly, obviously not something that would work especially not to your early adopter. Something Andrew and I were talking about in the office earlier today about how, you know, Sony clearly recognized that, look, if you're going to sell a $400 or $500 box, the people who are buying that are your early adopters. They're interested in going and buying an awesome game machine to play games on. Surprise.
Yeah.
And they are the core people who have been buying those games for a long time.
Right.
And the fact that they would want to do the things that they have been doing when they're dropping a shit ton of money on a new box and not be, you know, not be alienated or put into a situation where they feel like they're not getting as much value. Oh, imagine that.
The idea that the way all of this was presented, and this may just have been the reality of it, is what they were thinking. And it's hard to underestimate them at this point. But the idea that they would only just express these things in ways that were taking things away from you, the consumer.
As a lot of people put it, it was all stick and no carrot.
Exactly. And that was what I was trying to do when we talked about it weeks ago, was like, well, let's say that it is always on. What conceivable cool things would they come out and say? And they never did.
Nope.
They never did. And that's what's so baffling.
And
And
obviously there is a set of people who are intrigued, at least by the idea, because everyone's still like brainstorming, like, what could they have done with it? But it's all this just very like romanticized. Well, this would be great if they did this, but they never committed to doing any of it.
That's absolutely right. And I'm one of those people, too, that I was sort of interested to see where this was going, because I like selling games back to and getting some money for them, too. I would love to be able to do that without getting off my ass. I would like to not have to drive down to GameSpot and trade back the game I bought.
Stop.
I said spot.
Yeah,
I do
GameSpot
that all
doesn't.
The time.
They don't.
I do that all the time.
Game trade-ins.
I do that all the time. But you know, GameStop. And you know, if there was a way, you can buy a game digitally and then sell it
but
back.
But they never actually promised.
I
that
know,
either.
But I was hoping we were getting to some like
that's
okay,
what
what's
E3
the stuff?
Needed to be. They got the shit out of the way,
yeah.
And they needed to come with E3 and be like, "We're doing this. We're committing to it. Punch, punch, punch. In this is the shit we believe in. This is why we believe in it. Confidence, confidence, confidence. And then you got to commit." And what they did is they showed up at E3 and they said, "Andrew, you're not going to get an interview. Fuck you, round tables canceled. Oh, you want to play a 360, bitch? You want to be offline, play a 360? What are the advantages? Get out of my face." And then they were like, it was just bizarre.
It was bizarre. A complete
you
failure.
Actually, that, Christian, that was one of your best funny, like, that actually was kind of it.
It was a complete failure in messaging, and it baffles the mind. And especially
but
in
here's
light
the thing,
of
Jeff,
them in doing the 180.
We can't, don't give them the out of messaging. It was a complete failure at a design and intent level.
I think
that's what it looks like now.
A big problem with their entire strategy, and you know, people like talking about the third system curse. It's like, well, like, oh, you're telling me that there's going to be these great digital benefits. What is it? Well, just trust us. You know?
And they gave no credibility to that in this gen. The games on demand, they rape you with prices. Like, there wasn't no easing into it. Like, look, we're getting there. This is going to be great.
And it's really fun seeing maybe really dedicated, passionate Xbox fans that are, you know, were really gung-ho about Xbox One, regardless of all the controversy. And it's like, well, why? It's like, well, you know, why is always on such a bad, you know, it's not a bad thing. Look at Steam. Steam has great sales. It's like, well, why would you assume that that games are going to get
And that's
cheaper
why I said it's
Xbox
not
One.
Just messaging. I think that they genuinely, though, I think that in, you know, reflecting on this now, that it does, especially as quickly as they pulled the plug on everything, you know, effectively throwing the baby out with the bathwater, shows to me that, you know what, all that lip service you were giving to all of the great things that you were going to bring along, it was just lip service. And you didn't have those things figured out. You only had the core piece that you wanted to lock down, which was the digital rights system. and the login system. And the rest of it was all some pie in the sky stuff that may or may not have happened. But now that you're not going to get your DRM system, it's like, well, we're just going to take all the toys and put them in the box and go away.
Yeah.
Well,
it's not that like, oh man, this digital connected, we can make great games. And then it's like, oh, well, it didn't start from there. It started from, well, how do we lock down games? And then how can we figure out a way to make games from that kind of policy?
I feel like it's a simple way to debut and unveil something. And while I don't think, having played a vertical slice of the game Knack at E3, didn't blow me away. But the way that Cerny came out and presented that at the PS4 presentation, I think is an effective way to present something like, we have this console that can be, you know, here's, I'm not going to pretend like I know, understand RAM or ROM, whatever, blah, blah. We have this console, here's processing power, stuff we can do with that is real-time physics. Here's this game that does that. And it's like, oh, this is that thing you said. Here's you showing how that's positive. Cool, I'm on board. And Microsoft didn't do any of that with this stuff. They're like, we have this thing.
Yeah, the really interesting thing about Microsoft is that...
Even Family Share, which was the closest they came to describing something, they really didn't describe how Family Share was going to work. Well, you can share it with 10 people. Did anyone really believe that you were going to buy a game once and that 10 people were going to play
supposedly
it?
Supposedly, it was like a demo version that you could share with. That's kind of coming out now.
Well, now that's saying is that... Yeah, there's rumors about that because they haven't gotten in front of any of this.
That's what drives me so fucking crazy is that I was actually getting kind of excited about the juxtaposition of the two systems and saying, well, if there's one that lives in this sort of digital realm, and the PS4 is going to have a lot of that as well. So I'm not discounting saying one's better than the other. I just loved the idea of there being a real choice between these two systems and one doing things one way and the other doing things the other way. I happen to buy both of them already, but I was excited to see how that was going to turn out. And maybe, and I was very hopeful, and maybe, you know, I've been accused of being Pollyanna, whatever. Maybe there could be a way to push the technology forward because I'll take my vegetables of having to plug my system in all the time because I don't really care because my system's plugged in all the time anyway. If you're giving me some candy on the other end of like all this cool shit, but the cool shit was never articulated.
And if the cool shit was all that cool and you're in this fierce console war, why wouldn't you still be sticking to it now?
That is the biggest thing. That's the biggest thing is that the fact that they would flip flop so fast and so completely. It's like, A, did you not anticipate this? Did you not see this coming a mile away with how fucking bullocks your
well, no, they
presentation
only,
of
they
it
They only
was?
Got feedback during E3.
Mark Whitten actually talked about that, which is ridiculous.
Like they got great feedback from E3, but before then, no.
But,
no one told them.
But secondly, like, if it's this flimsy a design idea, then... Were you not planning to have this be a sort of integral part of your machine all the time? Like, it just completely hollows out your point and your position if you're like, well, we don't need to do that.
And
it's
even
like,
if
no, this is vital, guys. This is vital. It's going to change the future of gaming. And I'm sort of like, wow, tell me more. And then they're like, well, we don't have to do that, really.
Well, clearly, I mean, I think that partly, even if you're Microsoft and you're a big corporation and you're, you know, not paying as close attention to the pulse as you ought to be because you've gotten proud, there was no way to miss the initial response to this. There was no way to have not planned for it. The only thing to my mind that got them to react and react to this strong way is they had to be getting absolutely destroyed on pre-orders. I mean, they had to be getting, you had to figure that.
But that's what's so
in reality, you think about this from a corporate standpoint, they had sat down and they had, operational meetings about like, here's what's going to happen when we come out with this story. Here's the book, because they always have those, like, trust me, before every time anyone at any Microsoft event is in front of anybody, they have a book that they go through that like tells them all of the questions that might be asked,
right,
all the answers, all the talking points. I mean, they did not have that. They had that in place as always.
Somebody wrote that book poorly.
Well, clearly they wrote that book poorly.
Going to different pages.
But as part of that strategy, then behind the scenes, they clearly had to have also thought about like, okay, what's our threshold on this? Like, how far are we willing to hold the banner for all this stuff we believe in when the results start coming in? Because both these consoles then went on pre-sale, and when they both went on pre-sale, you know, the anecdotal evidence we have from folks who are working at GameStops and, you know, and then of course looking at like Amazon results show that like it was bad. And at some places it was arguably really bad. But what was that number? Like, what was that ratio of how far are we going to let our pre-order number comparison slide before we say, oh shit. And evidently it was something. And this thing went so far past that they just didn't go, oh shit. They went full on, like slap the panic button. Oh my God.
Well, the thing that is, I mean, if you want to put on the tinfoil hat a little bit, the thing that it seems pretty clear to me is that they, at least some part of that group was convinced that Sony was going to do the same thing. And, you know, people are like, well, they just assumed Sony was going to collude with them. And at a certain point, you have to go, well, if it was this shocking to them that either they had been talking to publishers that kind of wanted this, or
mistake. There was definitely soap opera level jockeying.
Somebody's
going to
write
all
a great book about this someday.
Because that statement that Sony made by going on stage during its presentation as the platform holder and saying, we don't do DRM, was a challenge to publishers. It was like, you know what? No, we're not going to let you bully us into being the bad guys with the customer, because we love gamers and we know what gamers want, and we're going to show it to them because we fucked up last time. And we're going to get it right this time. And we're going to dare you to say, you know what? Fine, be a publisher, be a person who just makes games, and then tell your gamer customer that you're not going to look out for them and that you're going to, you know, put these restrictions on them that they're clamoring against. And I think that changed the landscape dramatically. I think that suddenly made it to where for an EA or an Ubisoft or whoever was really behind pushing those ideas to walk across that street would have been business suicide. And they don't make hardware and they don't do anything else. They're not an electronics giant. They don't have other industries. For them, selling games is their entire lifeblood.
I mean, essentially, Microsoft's greatest mistake probably is to actually just go on record about this first. You know, it was a game. It was a game of chicken, and they lost. You know,
that's a very good way to put it. I mean, as a matter of fact, that's what Brian Leahy said in the Shaq chatty. He was like, "It was a big game of chicken, and Microsoft flinched first."
Yeah.
So you want to hear the flinch? I mean, we have that.
Yeah, go for it.
We have Don's here. We'll go to the break with this. This is Don Matrick, the president of the interactive entertainment business at Microsoft. You all saw him during the presentations. The redactive entertainment business. Like, last week at E3, the excitement, creativity, and future of our industry was on display for a global audience. For us, the future comes in the form of the Xbox One, a system designed to be the best place to play games this year and for many years to come. As is our heritage with Xbox, we designed a system that could take full advantage of advances in technology in order to deliver a breakthrough in gameplay and entertainment. We imagined a new set of benefits, such as easier roaming. Apparently it's a cell phone, I don't know. Family sharing.
Wait, does it have a handle like the GameCube?
the lunchbox.
I think that means logging in to your...
It does, okay, I know, sorry. We're just making fun of him. As easier roaming, family sharing, and new ways to try and buy games. We believe in the benefits of a connected digital future.
Not to try games and also buy games. Not to try and buy. Good luck buying this.
No, that's what it was.
Give it a good shot.
That's exactly what it was.
Try and buy these things.
Try to buy it.
I kept on going to GameStop and they just wouldn't let me buy it. I don't know.
Since unveiling our plans for Xbox One, my team and I have heard directly from many of you, read your comments, and listened to your feedback. I'd like to take the opportunity today to thank you for your assistance in helping us to reshape the future of Xbox One. You told us how much you loved the flexibility you have today with games delivered on disc. The ability to lend, share, and resell these games at your discretion is of incredible importance to you. Also important to you is the freedom to play offline for any length of time, anywhere in the world. It's like, hey, I think I ought to be able to put my $60 disc inside my game machine and play it. So today I'm announcing the following changes to Xbox One and how you can play, share, lend, and resell your games exactly as you do today on Xbox 360. Here's what it means. An internet connection will not be required to play offline Xbox One games. After a one-time system setup with a new Xbox One, you can play any disc-based game without ever connecting online again. There is no 24-hour connection requirement, and you can take your Xbox One anywhere you want and play your games just like on the Xbox 360. Trade-in, lend, resell, gift, and rent disc-based games just like you do today. There will be no limitations to using and sharing games. It will work just as it does today on the Xbox 360. In addition to buying a disc from a retailer, you can also download games from Xbox Live on day of release. And if you choose to download your games, you will be able to play them offline just like you do today. Xbox One games will be playable on any Xbox One console. There will be no regional restrictions. So these changes will impact some of the scenarios we previously announced for Xbox One. The sharing of games will work as it does today. You will simply share the disc. Downloaded titles cannot be shared or resold. Also similar to today, playing disc-based games will require that the disc be in the tray. And then he goes on to thank people. Like,
that,
we appreciate
that
your passion.
That part that I'm bummed out about. I hate having the disc in my tray.
And he winds it all up saying,
digitally.
We have listened and we have heard loud and clear from your feedback that you want the best of both worlds.
Just originally, like we thought you wanted only half the best. We were wrong. We were like, you want the full
best. You want
best.
Only one world. We thought that's why we called it one.
So, you know, there are a couple of positives. I mean, there's a couple of positives here that go beyond the main. Like, one of them that's good is that day one digital seems to be alive.
Yeah.
So being able to still get games through the Xbox store, you know, as a digital delivery right off the bat, I think that's a good step forward. I mean, I think that part of what Microsoft miscalculated on here is whoever at the company was thinking about the good things that could happen with this wasn't thinking about how to roll it out in a way that the normal right. gamer could get it and understand it. You don't go from one system to a whole new system without like some sort of bridging.
Well, you don't tell people here's what you're not going to be able to do.
Yeah, don't start it off.
You know
with
that stuff that you've been doing.
Yeah, you can't do that.
Also, this is a,
well, what do we get in return? Wait, what?
This is a system where the primary selling point is like, man, it's so simple to use. You don't even need to like switch inputs on your TV. Like, that's so difficult, right? You know, you just say the channel name. It's like, oh, but if you want to sell games, you have to go through like 18 different steps. Like,
that's what I don't understand.
It's like really bizarre. It's like, well, and if you want to play any disc-based game that you buy from the store, well, you're gonna have to install it and then blah 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 blah. It's like it's really bizarre that like they didn't think like, well, you know, we're gonna make everything so easy except for the things that you do all the time on Xbox.
There's like a whole team of customer support phone operators who are like, thank God. Oh God, thank God. I don't have to answer those calls from some mom who's like, why isn't it working?
Is your system on? Is it connected to the internet? Has it been connected in the last 24 hours? Just keep on going.
Have you unplugged the modem from the wall?
Is it whose disc is in your system right now?
Did you buy the disc? Wait.
Sony's made mistakes in the past, but an example of how you do a press announcement is like how they announced that you have to pay to play multiplayer now.
Very quietly.
Well, it was like, PS Plus gives you a great value. You get all these games. You get all this stuff. You get to play multiplayer online. And here's some more free games you get this month. Everybody's like, more free games! What? Wait, what? Well, fucking done. Like that. And Microsoft didn't do, like, here's what you get. They're like, welcome to the Xbox One. Here's what you don't get. It's like, what?
And the funny thing is, even his apology, the retraction, like, it still points out, well, these are still the things you can't do now under this new system.
Let me ask you this question, though. Yeah, it is pretty funny. Let me ask you this question, though, guys, because
they're like mom. They're like mom when you're a little kid. They really are like mom. No, you cannot do that.
Yeah, bad consumer. And then like, what? Wait, why are they mad at us? Well, you know. Anyway, let me ask you this question.
So you're saying we're all going to have to go to therapy if we buy an Xbox One?
I think that there's been a lot of therapy this week already. the vast majority of the next gen games that I saw in E3. We're erasing the line between single player and multiplayer. There's no
it's a
modes.
Big theme.
No modes anymore. It's all one mode. You're in the game. It's happening. People are going to jump in. So isn't that sort of effectively requiring an internet connection for most of the games anyway?
I wonder if games are
going
to say that. Like, will Titanfall, instead of like, bet, you know, requires connect, will it say requires online?
Oh, I think there absolutely are games that will.
Yeah. But the thing is, give consumers the choice, you know, that maybe you don't want to play a Kinect game. Maybe you don't want to play an online game.
Well, I think.
Well, let me just say this about the choice thing. One of the things that I kept trying to remind people all week was that you still have a choice. Like if Microsoft had put out the Xbox One and then like a couple of minutes after it was released was like, okay, by the way, you have to be online all the time. You know, it's not like you didn't have a buying choice, and it's not like there wasn't a competitor who was offering an alternative. So they didn't actually take anything away from you. you had this choice to make, and it seems like a lot of people made that choice, and Microsoft went, fuck, a lot of people made that choice.
They did a little bit, though, because there are Microsoft exclusives. If you're a Halo fan, that took it away from you. They locked up Call of Duty maps
first. And a lot of people have been in that ecosystem for so long, and they want to see, you know, keep on growing their gamer score. They want to stay with their Xbox Live friends. And there was a lot of resentment being like,
yeah, resentment's a good way to put it.
Being like, ugh, I guess I'm going to get a PlayStation 4 because they don't want to, but they felt like Microsoft wasn't giving them a
choice.
A lot of
people want to get a PlayStation 4.
No, all right. I think, well, there's still a lot of fans. I mean, that's how fanboyism works. And I think Microsoft forgot that every generational transition offers that.
It's a reset.
They forgot that not every PlayStation 2 gamer went on to PS3, much to their advantage.
Which is exactly the same thing Sony was doing, which is like, you're going to get a second job to be able to afford this, motherfucker.
Somehow they forgot that they managed to steal a large part of the market away from PlayStation.
Especially in North America.
Yeah, and through their just sheer maybe arrogance, they let the same thing potentially happen to them.
So let's take a little break. When we come back, I want to talk. First of all, I got a bunch of just quick hit responses from listeners and general Shack users on how they responded to this change, because it's been a big, like, there's lots of, it's all over the board. Some people, like a lot of people, obviously very excited about it. A lot of people still saying, well, I'm still feeling betrayed and I'm upset. Some people lamenting what might be lost.
Yeah, I was retweeting a lot of people last night that I was very surprised hearing didn't want this change to happen.
So we can talk about where digital
people on board,
where digital could still go, what some of the things that they left behind are, and how maybe they could recapture them. We've got all of that. I think we're also going to talk some Last of Us as well. We'll let Andrew pull in an E3 report and Christian do an E3 report. So stick around. There will be more, much more We Can Confirm to come. This episode of We Can Confirm is brought to you by the Gamefly app, the must-have app for gamers with info on over 50,000 console, handheld, iOS, and PC games. Get up-to-the-minute gaming news along with thousands of HD videos and screenshots. Get into the action by creating your own profile, post updates about what you're playing, and stay connected with friends and other gamers. Tired of standing in lines? Find great deals on new and used games, pre-order upcoming titles, and get Gamefly's daily deals all from the palm of your hand. If you're already a Gamefly member, manage your game queue on the go and keep games you like with just one tap. Get the Gamefly app for free today on your iPhone, iPad, and Android devices. All right, so Pilzer, one of the Shack members, has the non-PR bullshit translation for us of what Microsoft said. He says, we tried to strong arm you. We just miserably failed. And now we will crawl on all four around the place with our pants around our ankles and our sad, sticky balls dangling out for everybody to have fun with and take pictures.
Because Kinect can do that.
Because Kinect can.
Well, that's the thing is, you know, maybe the pre-order numbers were vastly disproportionate, you know, and one was outselling the other in big numbers. But I feel like for me, the bigger issue was $100 difference.
I think the $100 difference still looms as a very big deal. That and the inclusion of the Kinect camera.
Instead of having like these like three gigantic things looming over Xbox, now it only has like two.
So. Well, now it has two, and they can. I mean, the pricing thing is something that obviously they can still come back and change. I mean, they can elect to take whatever loss they need to take on it. They can touch their pricing strategy down the line and run specials and bundle stuff
or
and
subscriptions.
That. Yeah, there's all sorts of games they can play with that. The Kinect, I mean, that is something they seem very committed to, although they seem very committed to dedicated online. And one thing someone pointed out is there were a number of games that were on display at E3 where the Kinect sensors were just plain like not on the shelf. Like they were like shoved underneath the machine or something. So,
well, not every game is going to take advantage of it.
Well, not every game. I mean, this is a common thing among all consoles, but not every game was running on Xbox One hardware.
Oh yeah, no, a lot of them. So, I mean,
the Kinect, I don't think it means that they're not going to implement it. Like I played Rise, and you know, I asked them if they're going to have Rumble Trigger in it, and so I mean, features aren't always there. They didn't want to include that. I think it's cool. That's just an example.
And the thing is, you know, Kinect will be there for like when you want to, for some reason, snap live television on to while you're playing Rise. So
yeah, that's true.
Entity said that they read it as, "Oops, we fucked up big, but we still want in on this console war. And that was pretty much the way I read it, too.
Console.
I mean, that to me is the thing. It's like, what was the point at which you're looking at those pre-order numbers, and probably they don't, I mean, keep in mind, they're not going to know the exact numbers, but they get like, obviously a friendly heads up from their retail partners of, you guys are getting killed. And it might even be like, you know, you guys are getting killed like 5-1 right now. What was the point where they said, well, if it goes over this number, we're going to be so far behind that we will never be able to be a player in this generation.
It was so quick.
3-1, 4-1. I think it was somewhere around 3 or 4-1.
I mean, I still find it really unlikely that that PlayStation would have such a huge advantage. I mean, there's going to be so little inventory at launch for both consoles. So I'm not exactly sure.
So I don't think it's a launch issue so much as a post-launch issue, because at some point in time you dig out of that constrained state, right? At some point in time, you've got enough, you know, the factories are working around the clock, and they're pushing these things out as quickly as possible. You fulfill your initial orders, you backfill with your, somewhere around the second or third shipment, hopefully you've satisfied all of the pre-orders. But what if they're so out of balance that, like, it gets to a state where Xbox Ones are sitting on the shelves in stores? And this is a bad public perception thing.
You don't want the Wii U situation.
You do not want people building forts of Xbox Ones inside their stores because they have so many of them sitting around. That would be really bad.
Yeah. I just wonder if they had presented it like, you know, I have a TiVo, an actual TiVo, and I really like it. It requires me to have it plugged into the internet to work properly.
Yeah.
And I wonder if they had presented it like, hey, this Xbox, I mean, as we were talking about weeks ago, it expects to be always on rather than it is required to be always on. So it's like, hey, you got to plug this thing in for it to do the stuff that's going to do. All the games are going to be expect to be always on, so you need to have an internet connection to use this box properly. And then when people are like, well, what if I unplug it, will it still work? Well, yeah, but the games, all that functionality that it's built into the box ain't gonna. So, because it needs that, you know, like, it's not a, hey, we're bricking this box if you don't plug it in, or like, it just came across as a...
They presented it incredibly poorly.
Yeah, it came across as like a punishment.
They also, I mean, they laid out this strategy in the same year that SimCity imploded.
And at the same time that the fucking NSA Prism bullshit is like coming down.
That was also really bad timing.
I know, it's crazy,
in
right?
By the way, they
still need to address the Kinect sensor and security stuff. And I think
that is far more worrisome than anything else, really.
Actually, I'm not too concerned about that. I love the targeted marketing that Facebook offers me.
And, well, there's some other parts of this that I want to come back to, but I want to bring up right now since you brought up Prism and that stuff. There was a Don Matrick interview at E3. Believe it or not, he actually did an interview. He did it with Bloomberg, and it's been on Bloomberg TV. A lot of people have cited it. There's some other stuff I want to talk about there because I thought the whole interview was a mess for Matrick. And honestly,
well, I'm glad that he's talking to investors and not gamers. That's
just cool. Him going, I'm rich, bitch. And
I don't have a lot. I mean, I know a lot of the Microsoft execs have had the, you know, gotten to know them over the years. I don't really know Matrick that well. So, I mean, I don't want to disparage the man, but I can say this from a critical eye. They need to get him out of the country and someplace where there is no microphone, camera or anything else until after the Xbox One is done and launched and out there, because he's poisoned now. The things that they've had him to say, the things they put him out there to do, there's just no one's going to look at him and think of anything other than it. But one of the things he brought up, they asked him about the privacy issues and about the Kinect camera. And he said, among other things, there was nothing about the way they had their security setups that would make him uncomfortable. Well, you know what, dummy? That's not the point. You can't tell us there's nothing that would make you uncomfortable because you're selling the damn thing.
Yeah.
There's nothing that would make me uncomfortable. You should feel fine taking it into your home.
I think that the interviewer should have a series of experiments as to what makes you uncomfortable. I mean, does this make you uncomfortable?
Yeah, just start sitting closer and closer.
How uncomfortable are you now?
Anyway, I just think like that is among many examples of how just out of touch with reality they are. Like, you don't say that. You give demonstrable explanations about it's not well, there's nothing in there that makes me feel uncomfortable. Of course, you know, I work for Microsoft and I already get to go in and erase all the data files every night because I go into the security room and take care of that.
Well, we went into the Xbox 101 meeting that they were giving. I don't know if anybody else had that meeting, but we asked, what does the sensor do just normally? Is it watching me? What is it doing? And the guys were very vehement and said, no, it's waiting to be asked to be turned on. Okay. Well, what is it doing while it's waiting to be asked to be turned on? Is it?
It's having a cup of tea.
Listening.
It's having a cup of tea.
It's listening to everything, waiting for someone to say Xbox. And then I also asked them, you know, if I know everybody hates talking about the cloud, but if really the cloud is doing a lot of processes in these games and you lose your internet connection for less than 24 hours, but momentarily, what happens? Does the game have a fail state that it goes to? Does all the AI get dumb for a second? What happens? Okay. Like,
I just had this image of a game where like everything's happening and all of a sudden it's like,
yeah. Whoa, hang on a second.
Where did he go, George?
Yeah.
And the guy's like, no, the game will still work. It'll still work. And I'm like, well, how is that possible? If it's offloading all those processes to the cloud, how will it still work locally? And there was no answer for that. And that's really a lot of my, I guess I was just hopeful that this was all sort of going to be explained.
What you wanted to hear, you wanted to hear someone say, well, see, Jeff, the way it works is we have a dynamic processing system that understands the connectivity state of our console at any given moment. And as soon as we detect that connection is not going to be up to speed, we return the load of anything that's urgent on the game back into the central processing on your local client so that it is absolutely seamless game experience.
Yeah, but how would that work? How would the game be able to do both?
That's 201, though, you guys.
Yeah,
I guess. But you needed to hear that, not. Well, you know, no, it's going to work.
Awesome. Cloud processing is the blast processing of this generation. It is dumb. But Garnet and I have already argued this.
Well, I think my concern is whether or not it's the 32X. And by the 32X, I mean that it's the add-on that now a developer doesn't feel is comfortable that everybody has, and it becomes not taken advantage of.
Yeah. And that's really all that I've been expressing in all this week or since the announcement was made is I was really curious as to where this was going. And I really feel like them making this about face without ever really. And I guess it speaks to them not knowing themselves and really being ill prepared for what happened. But I was really excited to see what their vision of the future of gaming was because they weren't our only answer. They weren't our only source for games. We had this other option. So if what they were presenting was shit, we could buy the PS4 and be happy. But I loved the idea of, well, hey, maybe because we're asking you to give up certain things like being able to play offline, we're going to give you certain things like cheaper games, like being able to sell your games back without having a physical copy of them, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, that I think would have been a really cool value proposition and could have pushed the whole idea of what video games are forward.
So I think what you need to do that is you need to give that stuff first before you start taking away things.
Absolutely.
I agree 100%.
Start all of that. Like I was saying, their Games on Demand channel is shitty now. There's no faith. People are like, well, it's like Steam. Steam's always like, no. This is happening right now. You can't compare it to when Steam launched, which was also shit. But this is happening right now after people hate Origin DRM. People hate Uplay DRM. SimCity is just a total freaking mess. Microsoft hasn't had good faith with their online pricing and digital content management for games, and you can't transfer over. And like all this stuff built up, and they hit this point. And now if you want to do that, release this thing like this and then start showing us this awesome stuff. Like, hey, this game's better with the cloud, or here's this thing that's come out, or hey, you want to trade in your digital game? Do it, Microsoft. You still can. And like you said, in that Matrix thing, he was still taking away shit. Well, you can still trade in your freaking digital copies and we'll give
If you take Garnet's 32X point and you say, well, now you can be offline and now developers are going, well, wait. Are we making these games that are always online, or are we making these games that aren't always online?
Well, and here's the
they have that flexibility, though. That's the thing.
And here's the other thing. And I actually would like to use this maybe as a chance to talk a little bit about what I would like, what theoretically could have been a cool vision for Xbox One. And The reality is that it's not the 32X because it never even existed. As a developer, you never had any guarantee that the player would be connected to your cloud servers because it was a once every 24-hour situation. The Microsoft solution for Xbox One was still only really dipping its toes instead of going balls deep into digital. If they had gone full bore all the way in, they would have come out and said, you know what? This is an always connected device. Not a once every 24 hours. This is an always connected, persistent internet connection device, because in order to do the things that they're promising with the cloud, it would have needed to be a guarantee to you, the developer, you will have a connection to the internet.
That's exactly why you don't come out and say, it checks to see if it's online. Ever. It doesn't ever need to check.
There's no check. And it is a connected device. Again,
to work as intended, one of the things you need to do is plug it into the wall.
And you also have to plug it into
also have to plug it into an internet connection.
Or put it on
Wi-Fi.
How
it works. It's not about like checking in on you. And the idea that they ever even went down that road.
Asinine.
Is it completely asinine? And to say, oh, well, no, it doesn't check in on you every 3 minutes. It doesn't check on you every week. It doesn't ever check
and
on you.
It goes
That's
to
bullshit.
Show you. Then this is the part that actually starts to make me frustrated with them. It goes to show you that those promises of services, and especially where the big promise is the power of the cloud, was not as integral to the program as it was ever presented to be, because you cannot guarantee it to a developer if it's a once every 24-hour check. I mean, I can't get over this piece. If your device is not persistently connected, then all of the bullshit cloud stuff is out.
Well, I'll push back on you
on
that.
I can't make Darkstalkers 3 and use the cloud because I can't guarantee
that. That's a big supposition I think you're making. I'm sorry to dominate the conversation, but I think that's a big supposition that you're making, because there is a potential that their thought process was, well, we can't force people to be on every 3 minutes because they hated that. So we'll just say 24 hours and we'll tell developers they're going to be on all the time. You know what I mean? I think that they were just being dumb
because no one making a large budget game is going to make a large budget game for a fledgling console that doesn't have a huge install base yet, of which part of the install base might not be able to play it.
No. But don't attribute to malice what can be attributed to incompetence. That's what I always say.
I'm attributing it all to incompetence. I'm saying that they were not as committed to this digital future as they say they were. Or say they are, and that if they had been, many of these issues would have gone away because they would have had a clear vision of where they were going. They would have been exactly like we were saying. They would have been saying, this is a device that's connected to the internet all the time. And part of the reason we're doing that is because cloud as a platform is a really big piece of that for us. And the only way we can assure, you know, that it's a working system is for your device to be connected to it all the time.
I think they can have that commitment, but just because what they're saying is, if it needs to check in once every 24 hours, everyone that buys this console is able to go online, and then you release a game like Titanfall or whatever.
But Titanfall's multiplayer. Let's think about a single player game.
Okay, I'm saying there's no
difference. Their goal was to erase that line.
Even
I think
if
a lot
it's
of
a single player game, let's
the
say
Division.
You're playing Assassin's Creed 4, but all of the AI is done in the cloud. Well, then that's the same thing as saying, well, it's a multiplayer game. You need to be online. This is a cloud game. You need to be online. And you know, developer, that everybody that owns our console is able to go online.
But you don't know that they're connected all the time because we're not requiring that. And that's a fundamental stumbling block. If I'm a publisher and I'm looking at it, there is no way I'm going to commit to doing something that might not work for everybody, or it might be a stumbling block for everybody.
Well, why would you release a multiplayer only game then? I'm not defending their practice. I think...
Why would I release... Because a multiplayer only game is a different... Why would I sell apples and oranges? Because some people like apples and some people like oranges.
I don't know what I'm saying, but it requires people to always be online.
And you're accepting that. You're saying that I am making a multiplayer only game. But if you're making a single player game, it's not. That is such a hard... Imagine trying to go out in market and much less PR anybody of, well, this is a single player game, but you have to have an always on internet connection.
I just think someone did that
this
year.
Yeah. How did that go?
And remember, they used the excuse of the cloud as well.
Which was also learned later to be not really valid because...
Because once again, like fundamentally, the way that we're approaching cloud computing, it's
classic
not...
Every
me.
Show.
Classic me.
It's the way we're approaching cloud computing, like, it's not going to work the way Microsoft says it's going to work. It really just fundamentally cannot, not right now anyway. The bandwidth isn't there.
You mean because of latency and bandwidth?
Yeah.
A lot of people are talking about the fact that perhaps this console was built not for now, but for 5 years from now. And I mean, I don't know enough to be able to say yes or no to that. I just bring it up because I've heard it bandied about.
I mean, I genuinely believe wholeheartedly that the cloud, quote unquote, that Microsoft is talking about, the three servers that every Xbox will individually get, that's just bullshit.
Why? You just in your gut or
no?
Because
once again, so you're not going to offload rendering off of that. Okay, you're offloading things like AI calculations, right? You can do that. Okay, you can offload tracking individual NPCs or human characters. That's what we call dedicated servers in multiplayer. That you're essentially, we've had the cloud. The way that Microsoft is talking about the cloud is just an extension of what we've had during the PS1 era during SOCOM matches.
Don't worry, everybody. I've already been arguing with Andrew about this for half the day. Like, he's right to a degree, I think, but there are still platform. I mean. The whole idea of platform as a service is that you can offload increasingly more OS level operations to that.
And I see a potential in that. I think they're being incredibly misleading about that. And I think the best example of what a game
misleading
powered by the cloud, quote unquote, would be Forza. You know, it's tracking your behavior and it stores that, quote unquote, in the cloud and makes that available regardless of whether or not you're playing or not. That's a really clever use of the cloud.
And creates AI drivers for multiple single player instances and distributes them back out to those. I mean, that's more sophisticated than what's been done currently.
But it's not. Oh, well, now my Xbox One is three times more powerful, which is the incorrect conclusion.
Heard that quote.
And we're also, it's like, well,
but they,
you know,
well, Jeff, they did say things about, like, the cloud's going to make the Xbox One multiple times more powerful than it is now.
That was their Asteroids demo. It was like them showing.
Yeah, I saw the Asteroids demo. And I think that the truth is somewhere in between the two. I think that obviously they were kind of showing pie in the sky, what may not be achievable in the same way that on every console launch they're showing stuff that we hope to achieve at some point, target
like
videos.
Gaikai.
But I also don't think it's just all horse shit. Like I feel like the idea of a game that my immediate surroundings being rendered by my local machine and a much larger, grander world being rendered
inherently because it is the cloud, quote unquote, really Xbox 360 should be able to do that. PlayStation 3 should be able to do that. Offload these kinds of calculations.
I'm not saying that they are. I don't think.
And that's why the Xbox One is so frustrating in that regard.
Why? Because they didn't put these resources to bear on the current technology?
They're referencing the ability to access the internet as if that's somehow
a
unique feature to
Xbox. Well, they designed a console around it, I think is what they're saying.
I think they also designed Xbox Live on Xbox 360 to be the internet. I think when you play Battlefield 3 on your Xbox 360, that there are cloud servers tracking every single player and every physics object that's occurring in there.
And they're also the people who make Azure, and they're pretty sophisticated players in that space.
I don't doubt that, but I do think we're buying into the Microsoft Kool-Aid on their cloud computing.
You're buying into a story, whatever you're looking at, because it's all ahead of release. I mean, you're buying into the Kool-Aid of the next Android being.
I don't think we can lament. Oh man, developers won't be able to take advantage of this because it wasn't really that significant to begin with, and it's still there. Well, so maybe I'm wrong. Okay, there's going to be this amazing cloud-powered game in the future. It doesn't disappear, right? It's still available, and that's the key takeaway here.
So. I think that because of where we started with this, I still feel like they weren't committed to this as strongly as they needed to be in the first place. I think the reversal said that at first, but then other evidence like this starts to come up, and I start to think about things like, wait, if you're going to use the cloud, having that 24-hour, once every 24-hour check-in, that doesn't tell me as a big-time developer that I'm going to have a persistently connected player that I can count on, and that's a problem. So there's other things I think they could have done, and I think that some of the things that they hinted at got... I think that you look at the articles that some of the people have come to defend what the digital future could have been, and it shows you that it's almost as if Microsoft were preying on our hopes and aspirations, because they weren't defining any of these things. They weren't saying any things, but there were easy ways for us to think about, like, oh, this would be really cool if they did this. It would be really cool if they had a great digital marketplace, right?
Well, you're speaking... unlimited power of the cell on the PS3, you know?
It is very similar.
Well,
to
you're speaking directly to me in a lot of ways, because I definitely was excited about the potentiality of it. And
well, look, Gizmodo wrote a very long editorial on Wednesday or Tuesday about all the things we're missing out on now because of this. But my problem about it is that it was very naive, to the extent that it was all based on, well, it could have been like this and it might have been like that. And there were these sorts of hints at things.
And Nintendo's HD console could have been more powerful than
right,
a PS4.
Exactly.
But I think it's interesting because I was on this show after the PS4 unveiling thing, and people gave me a bunch of shit saying, because I was Negative Nancy on the show, being like, no, it looked great, but like, when is this shit gonna happen? They promised this guy. I don't believe in any of that crap. I'll believe it when I see it. And people were like, you gotta have faith, man.
You saw it say Gaikai?
Yeah.
Because keep in mind, Sony has a cloud solution as well. It's called Gaikai, and while they haven't shown it yet, I mean,
well,
surely
their approach to cloud is still, you know, that's video based.
Well, at least they've said 2014, but I think the takeaway from this is like, sometimes people get excited and hopeful and buying into the Kool-Aid. Shut the fuck up. No one's taking money. No one's doing it. We're excited. You get excited about shit. I saw a new Cayman drive by me the other day, and I was like, that looks awesome. I want that. You get excited about things. That's fine. Other times people promise you stuff and you're a little skeptical. Be somewhere in the middle and make up your mind. But to sit there and be like, oh, well, it's not going to do that. Well, it can. You got to have faith. Well, it's going to do that. No, it's not. You're an idiot. Like, it's all... Right now, neither one of these consoles is out. Neither one might ever come out. I mean, you don't know.
You're saying they're gay?
No.
Okay, so here's the question.
Now I'm done. You can't do like a stupid joke and then just dive
into
it.
That's how I finish your rant.
You edit a scene and then you start the next scene. You're like, my turn.
That was a terrible, terrible edit, too. It was an awful joke that I'm embarrassed about.
Good.
But I still appreciate what you said. But
that's all that segues are anyway.
I want to talk a little bit about, I mean, I think the thing we haven't really talked about is this whole used game thing.
All right, so before you do that, then, let me throw this for you, because this is like the closer for all of that. We're talking about the digital and what it could have been. The Mongbat summed it up, I thought, very aptly. He said it was a very forward-thinking policy explained by an arrogant executive who should have realized he had one and only one shot to sell this to a reactionary crowd. Now it's panic. I liked the idea of not having to screw around with physical discs, even as I was able to have a physical copy of the game.
Yeah, I liked that idea, too. I really did. And the thing that I made clear on the YouTube video that Dan and I did, that I don't know if people really heard me say, is that I mean, I am a consumer. And when we were doing the Totally Rad show, the way we did that show is we would get a copy of the game. One of us would play it. We would hand it to the next guy. He would play it. Then hand it to the third guy, and he would play it, which would have been impossible in an Xbox One universe.
Maybe. I mean, you might have been able to do family sharing, dude.
Well, we weren't really related to each other, so
I don't think Microsoft would have really required that, but maybe Kinect is so advanced that it could tell...
I'm willing to get married to those guys. I will marry those guys. If I have to. Are you guys saying I should marry them? Because I will.
Wow, that went serious.
That was a joke. They're already married, dude.
Yeah.
Damn it. Anyway, no. So it would have directly affected both me and my livelihood if those policies. And yet, I still kind of got excited about the idea of potentially decoupling the physical media with the game itself, and what that might mean. Now, again, we can all get pissed off that these are potentials and nothing real, but I really felt like it was starting a ball moving down a hill, and there was talk of like, well, maybe Valve is thinking about doing some sort of lending thing or some sort of reselling thing.
There are rumors that in the latest Steam beta code that there's like hooks for a lending system.
Exactly.
No word yet from Valve and Steam on what that might be, but it sounds like they might be experimenting with it.
Honestly, I don't really care about lending so much. I just like the idea of being able to buy a new game and then sell it for a little bit of money. You know what I mean? So that I can keep funding new game purchases. And I think a lot of people feel that way. But, and the idea of being able to do that, like having value, basically moving to where, you know, music has already gone, and the idea of having value in the thing that is intrinsic in it without having to have a physical disk involved in the equation, I think it could. It could still happen.
Look, they can still do it. I mean, one of the things that I think would be interesting, and I hope that the, since they're still committed, I'm glad that they're still committed to day one digital, because I think day one digital is a great place to start with this. Now, one of the things that people have made as a comparison between the movie business and the games business is that the movie business has the box office. And that's always been a big difference, right? You had the box office and then you had the video market. And the video market was where you started to make money, but the box office...
Not so much anymore.
Not so much anymore, but the box office was where you laid the foundation. Well, you know, If indeed, Mr. Game Publisher, my game is $60 because you're taking into account that it might get resold and you're going to want to recoup some value of whatever the, you know, lost amount of income is due to resales out of that $60 price. What if you came at it with, since everyone's going to be connected anyway, obviously you're committed to this connected idea, release a game 2 weeks early, digitally only. You know it's locked down. You know I'm not going to be able to sell it. You know that, you know, once I buy it, it's mine and I own it. But instead of it being $60, sell it to me for $40. Sell me Assassin's Creed 4 the day that, you know, at the earliest, 2 weeks before it's available anywhere else. Just like, you know, you can't get it on, you know, when videos come out, you can't get it on Redbox. You can't get it on Amazon or whatever. Give me the, you know, do that.
I think that's an excellent idea.
Digital only.
I am curious.
First day.
If
2 week window, 3 week
GameStop
window, whatever
won't
it is.
Be able to strong arm. You know, I mean, I'm sure publishers were interested in doing that. And you know,
it's not GameStop. Least, it's Walmart and Best
well,
Buy.
But it doesn't. But look, there will still be people who want to buy. Look, there'll be people who want to buy it by disc. There will be people who will be upset about it. But there will also be people who say,
"I
will buy
reason,
it for $40."
The main, you know, Sony's had day one digital on PS3 for a long time now, right? And it, you know, you go to the store, it's $60 for Last of Us on, you know, PlayStation Network, or if you go to Best Buy, right? And there's a reason for that, because Best Buy doesn't want to be undercut by PlayStation Store, so. It really depends on whether or not the publishers feel like they can actually take on retail in the
coming generation. You know what? If they want the world to change, they need to be willing to shoulder some of the chance as well. And the way they do that is by going in and swinging and trying something new.
They should try something new, but the potential backlash as well, looks like no stores are going to carry Assassin's Creed 7 anymore.
And you know what the chances of that happening are?
The chances of that happening are really low.
The chances of that happening are really, really low. And if they actually are successful, they would move people into starting to buy things digitally at that top line. But you know what? If it's $60, no matter where I buy it, of course I'm going to go buy the disc. Of course I'm going to go buy the disc, because I'm going to have the disc, I'm going to have the box, I'm going to have the whole physical package. And why would I buy this ethereal, like, just digital code when I can buy the box and the disc and have that as an archival?
I don't know, dude. I prefer...
For $60.
I prefer the...
And let's not forget that...
Not having the disc.
But let's not forget that thing about games that doesn't really affect movies and music and other digital medias is that games... Have you tried downloading The Last of Us? That is a
25 gig.
Yeah, it's like a 25 gig download. You know, for a lot of people, it will still be faster just to drive out to a store.
Well, it depends on how fast you're driving. How far
come
the
back.
Store is.
Well, it also depends on if you're throttled or metered on your internet.
Yeah,
connection.
Exactly. And that is a problem that a lot of people
look. I understand that, like, doing this like early release by digital would have limitations, and it would say that there's only a set number of people who can get it, but it is a hard and fast way of saying, look, I know that all those people who are the core users who are really into this, and we think there's so many people connected that we're willing to sell a connected console, then this has like some ability to be done. And you know you're not going to lose anything. You know every dollar that goes right there into that game, that's the one sale you get.
Or do it both ways and have the one that you buy at the store have a box with an instruction book and be the limited edition that's in the steel case. Or you can get it 2 weeks early on your $40. Like, give people a reason. And that businesses won't go away. It might become a more niche market than, you know, everybody selling video games. But someone will still sell that shit.
I want every physical game in the future to include a body pillow, goddammit.
All right, let's take a little break. We're halfway through. We can confirm. We'll be right back.
Want to play all the latest video games? Try Gamefly.com, the number one video game rental service. Right now you can sign up for just $5.95, their lowest price ever. And Gamefly has over 8,000 titles, including the hottest new releases like Bioshock Infinite, Injustice: Gods Among Us, Tomb Raider, and Dead Island Riptide. Here's how easy it is. Just sign up, select your games, and Gamefly will ship them directly to your door. You can keep the games as long as you want. There are no late fees, and you can cancel at any time. Once you're done playing a game, you send it back, and Gamefly will send you the next available game on your list. And now, you can also play hundreds of PC games with Gamefly's new Unlimited PC Play. It's free for members. Gamefly also saves you money by letting you try your favorite games before buying them. If you really like a game you're playing, all you do is click Keep It on the Gamefly website, and it's yours at a deeply discounted price. And if you're still unsure, we're offering our listeners a special offer. Go to gamefly.com/weekendconfirmed for an extended 15-day free trial. That's GameFly.com/weekendconfirmed and sign up today.
All right, hiccups recovered. Ready to move on. I think we've elected to move on also on the subject, although
I didn't want to, you guys. I just want to put the record out there.
It was 3-1. Christian was like, I want to do some more.
At least 5 more hours.
But I do want to talk a little bit about the price, because one of the things we didn't mention in the beginning was that, like, look, this does not solve Microsoft's problems entirely. Like, they still have this price issue to conquer.
I think that's a much bigger deal it may not be a big deal to the hardcore, but I think it's a much bigger deal for Christmas. The idea of selling a new system at Christmas.
How about post-Christmas?
Well, okay.
Well, what I'm saying is people in holiday spending mode, you're at least like, $100. I'm buying this.
Yeah,
I'm going to go ahead and spend the money. But then after that, like, then when it gets like, you know, you're in that, you start looking at all the bills that came in from Christmas.
Right.
And you're thinking about, like, what else are you going to do? Like,
when you're like, damn it, I should have gotten a Wii U.
But the reason that these, well, that's,
I can't believe you said that with a straight face,
price problems all its own. But the reason all these consoles try to come out in October, November timeframe is to capitalize on that, ready
for
the holidays. And if your mom standing at the aisle and one's $100 more than the other,
I don't buy that, because I think moms go and, or dads or whomever, go and buy what their kid wants, and I don't think, if they're able to, if they're fortunate and they have the money, whatever, I don't think the kids are like, I want one of these. Pick which one. I think kids are very specific, and they're like, I want an Xbox One, and I want Forza 5. I want that, or I want Killzone, Shadowfall. I don't think parents are like, I think they just won't get them one. They're like, well, you know, Andrew asked for an Xbox One, but it was $100 more. Here's a PS4. Like, that's weird.
No,
parents do that all the time. I got so many shitty SNES games. But that were like $15
at Toys R Us. That's just like, here's a game. It's not like, you wanted a console? Here's the...
We don't need to have a fucking discussion about how parents react. You're the only parent here.
Yeah, that's right, motherfucker.
Don't you think there's a legitimate scenario where it's like, hey, little Timmy, what do you want for Christmas? I want an Xbox One. Oh, boy, that's $500. Well, can I have a PS4 then? Okay. You know, I think that
because that's only $400.
I mean, I think there's some.
That's $100.
$100.
That's 20 foot long.
I think there's some of that. And I think
and we are in a foot long based economy.
I think there are people that want. I want both. I am only pre-ordering a PS4 right now because that has the exclusives that interest me at launch. I think both launches are kind of meh at this point in terms of exclusives.
What's your most excited exclusive?
Honestly, Killzone, the demo and the hands-on, I thought it looked amazing.
It does look amazing.
I really enjoyed Killzone 2 and 3, and Shadowfall has a little less weightiness than the 3.
It's greener. It has greens. That's green stuff.
But also, I meant like the numbness through the analogs. It's a little more, it felt a little more precise.
I agree.
That PS4 controller is just so good.
It's wonderful.
I want both. So
Killzone
I think
really did deliver, by the way, at E3. I thought Killzone really delivered.
It had a great showing. So I think someone like me, or you know, a younger version of me, or whomever, I'm asking my wife, like, hey, I would like one of these for my birthday or Christmas. My birthday's in November.
You're asking mom of your family,
I think,
to give you one of those.
And I think she might be like, well, he wants both. I'll get the cheaper one now. But I think most people, there's not this situation where they're like, the bait and switch. I want to see that video of the N64 kid, like, they got me. No! Just like screaming.
No, I think it's more of a discussion that results in a buying decision. And I think that these are head-to-head products, and one is $100 cheaper, and it's a big, big deal.
I think Street Date's a bigger deal.
I think we had a huge advantage because it launched for $250 when everyone else was at least $100.
Except
more.
You couldn't get
it. Hold on, you know, Christian.
But
brought,
the thing
so
is, people
Christian
waited. People still wanted one. Right. It was sold out for more than a year because of that price advantage.
Street date. You think street date's most important?
I think
that it's really fascinating, and I'll let you finish that. I think it's really fascinating that Sony has not yet said when it's coming out.
October 25th, or 20th, whatever it is.
I'm not going to be the least bit shocked if they're in October.
I think it's going to, you think it's going to match the Battlefield 4 release date?
Yeah.
It makes a lot of sense.
I find it really fascinating that they were the first to announce their console and then the last to announce anything important about it.
Well, they have played their poker hand very well.
It worked really well. They rushed into announcing next gen, get gamers super excited about it, and like have everyone announcing PS4 versions of their games for months. And like Microsoft's like, shit, we gotta do something. And then just
like they're playing it like they got Pocket Kings. Yeah. They're just sitting there like,
I think people like me that want both and maybe don't have money for both, if one and assuming you're able to get one out of store, which I think you will, I enjoy waiting in line.
I think that's fun. Absolutely will be able to get one.
I do. I think that's exciting to go sit at like camp out. I did. I went to the Last of Us midnight release.
Dude, you know companies,
friends,
you know the retail. Awesome. You know that like the. That both Microsoft and Sony love that. I mean,
it's the greatest newspaper.
It's the best story. They will absolutely ensure that there are walk up. Like there won't be lots of them, but there will be walk up. So they will foster the lines. They will make sure they're there. There will be media
coverage.
There'll
be parties. There'll be parties.
Yeah,
guys signing the.
You
box
go into it eyes wide open. Now it's not like when the PS2 came out and everyone was like, "Oh my god, there aren't going to be like people go into it like, hey, let's go camp out at Best Buy." And
I slept
we'll
on the concrete to get my 360.
And you probably went with Dan or somebody, right?
It's before I met those guys.
The last console I camped out for
was it really?
GameCube.
Yeah. Wow.
GameCube was the last console I ever
My girlfriend at the time came and like brought me food.
That's awesome.
I was by myself. And you know what I had on my iPod? One Up Yours.
No way.
Swear to God.
No way.
Swear to God.
Oh, that's awesome.
So I think if one comes out first and you want both, you're not going to be like, I want both and this one's out right now. I can go camp for it. Well, never mind. You're going to go get that one. And then you're going to buy a game, a controller or whatever. And then when the next one comes out a week or two later, will you be ready to throw down again and go wait in that line? Or will you be like, you know what? I really want the Xbox One or this other one.
The other big
wait.
Thing is, with both of them coming out at the same time, you just dropped a bunch of money on your PS4 and spent money on all that stuff. But you're going to be playing your games.
Right.
And so you're going to be playing Killzone and you're going to be playing Knack.
And to be clear, it goes either way. If the Xbox One comes out first, I think I'm not trying to
they
say
would have that advantage
right,
as well.
Right.
Exactly. But
I just think for Christmas, which is really where the big money is, I think the hardcore is going to get the, you know, is going to buy no matter what.
They're
going
to gobble up as many as they can eat.
But for the holiday season and what's the hot toy on CBS News or whatever, I think $100 cheaper is a huge deal, and I think street date is less important.
And then that then carries over into the new year because people remember when they couldn't get either of them because they're, you know, constrained, and they have to tell Tommy in your scenario, hey, we know we couldn't get either of them, but we'll get you one in the new year.
Yeah.
That carries over then of like, well, this was the hotter of the two, or this was the big one. Or like,
I think winning Christmas is really important in sort of defining what happens in the following year, and then sort of things reset around Black Friday.
So I got to tell you about this Don Mattrick interview. So if you haven't seen it already, it's on Bloomberg TV, and This is really what was the turning point for me, just being like, they've got to get him out of the public light, because he's being interviewed by this guy. This actually took place during E3 when all the other ones were canceled. And you know, they right off the bat, they ask him about the $500 price because it's $100 more expensive than his competition. And I don't even know that I can express to you by reading this, although I'm going to try to, how almost dismissive he came across of like the validity of even being questioned about it. He said this about $499. He said it's a lower number than some of the analysts had forecast. We're over delivering value against other choices consumers can get. Interviewer butts in there and says, such as, and he says, well, you know, just any modern product you look at these days, $499 is a ridiculous price point. We're delivering thousands of dollars of value to people. So I think they're going to love it when they use it. That is the most, I mean, I just want to scream when I hear that. I mean, like what? Oh, you know, like things, dude. $500 is a ridiculously good price.
Do you know how much a plane costs?
It is really cheaper than a G6. It is
really expensive.
Much cheaper than a
G6. And then we're delivering thousands of dollars of value to people. Really? So how are you delivering thousands of dollars of value?
You clearly don't think you are, or else you would charge thousands of dollars and people would think it's worth thousands.
That's what value is. Ridiculous fucking statement.
That quote is interesting because that's actually why I bought a PS3 really close to launch, because I'm like, oh man, the components are like $1,000. Like a Blu-ray drive costs like $500 back
then. You're going to break it down and sell it for parts?
No, and I'm like, well, if Sony's selling, if Sony's losing money, then sure, that's like a good value to me.
Well, I get the getting in on a Blu-ray deal and Sony was eating money. What Don Matrick needs to be is Don needs to become the guy that is the Skype guy at the next presentation. Like whoever's giving the presentation is like, Xbox One's going to be great. Let's check in with Don. Hey, Don, how are you? Okay, great. Back to FIFA. He's just like, hey, for 2 seconds.
So they go on and ask him. I mean, like, as if all this wasn't bad enough. I really can't tell you how much I got my, obviously, you could tell I got my hackles up, but like, we're delivering a ridiculous price point, thousands of dollars
of
value.
It was ridiculous.
It is ridiculous. You're right.
It's 20% more ridiculous than PS4.
They go on and push, the interviewer pushes him about like the $100 price difference and the value. And what does he cite? Here's what the value is you're getting out of your Xbox One from Don Matrick. Services. He goes through and ticks off Twitch, because gamers really like seeing other gamers playing stuff. It's revolutionary. It's super cool, man. And Skype. Who ever heard of Skyping? Skype, amazing technology, fantastic.
And you can't do it anywhere else.
Smart glass integration, because using your tablet with your Xbox One is a fantastic thing. And just being able to walk in to your room and say, Xbox on. We've never been able to do that. It's revolutionary. You know what he didn't mention? He didn't say a fucking word about games. He did not say a single fucking word about how great the games are.
The Xbox One doesn't come with thousands of dollars worth of games. It's not PlayStation Plus, all right? Just
I mean, nothing about game. Not even the littlest hint that it had anything to do with gaming. Nothing of the advantages that do with gaming. Nothing. Like, by the way, it's the Xbox One game console. Or is it anymore? I mean, like it's just like they just they've got to get him out of the spotlight.
I mean, far be it for me to present the alternative view on this, but
there's an alternative view here.
Well,
I will explode.
I understand, as will most of our listeners. But there is a way to look at what he said and think. Well, the gaming is the given part. Both the boxes do that. I'm going to tell you about why ours is $100 more. Here's what we do that they don't.
No. Not now. Not when you're selling a gaming machine, and not when you're trying to sell the most amazing, super value, awesome piece of hardware ever. It's a ridiculous price because it's such an amazing thing.
I mean, what was the guy supposed to say?
Microsoft, hire me. Ask me the question, Jeff. We go into it. Read the question.
Why so expensive? Why $100 more, Don?
You know what, Jeff? That's a great question. And at Xbox, we believe in giving gamers every dollar worth of their value. And I'm not going to lie to you and say that $500 is cheap. It's a lot of money. But when you look into what we've put into this system, integrating a Kinect that launched at $150 for the Xbox 360, and this Kinect is more advanced and revolutionary than ever before. It's able to track your body, read your facial expressions, and provide gaming experiences that our consumers are going to love. Coupling that with great exclusive games like Forza 5, the relationship we built with Respawn. Did you like Call of Duty Modern Warfare? Our gamers love it. The ability we're able to give you with that in games like Halo that you know are coming in the best controller on the best platform where all your friends come over, gamers are going to find that when they play our system, they'll realize it was worth every penny, and we're giving it to them as cheaply as we possibly can. Next question.
Isn't that exactly
Sony said last generation?
No, Sony said get another job.
Yeah. Well, they said we're giving them the top-of-the-line box, and it's as cheap as we can make it.
But it's how you say it. It's humble.
It's acknowledging it. It's like saying, hey, yeah, $500 is expensive, and we recognize that.
The guy literally said, we think it's a great value. We think you're getting a lot. We think you're getting a lot more than what the price is.
No, he didn't just say that. He literally said $499 is a ridiculous price point. Like, we're stupid if we don't understand how $500 is such a great deal. And it's not such a great deal.
It's all freight. So in my former attorneying days,
I just don't get
And he pumped up this like, we're giving thousands of dollars of value. There's no indication you're giving $1,000 of value. You didn't back it up with anything. And everything you cited,
that was a
Twitch,
dumb sentence.
Twitch, I can watch on my computer. Skype, I can
How much was your computer?
I can whatever, I could do it. I could do it on a Google netbook.
What do you mean?
Well, a lot of these are services that exist. And again, it's
I could watch Twitch on any internet connected device.
That's all.
So my computer is a gaming
computer. How much
were those? Okay, so I could buy a what is the Google Chromebook cost? We're getting a bit sidetracked here. Okay, what's the most expensive?
Well, it's $250, I guess you're right.
Okay.
But the point I'm trying to make is I'm not trying to defend anywhere.
A smart glass, it means that I have to have a separate device. It doesn't have anything to goddamn do with my Xbox One. It's that my tablet will work with it some way. An Xbox One is a freaking gimmick.
Minor words that you add. Mm-hmm. Do you think, say things like Twitch, the first time integrated into a console, provides the best experience for users to use Twitch, something that we found gamers and people consuming this media really
enjoy. So he did
enjoy.
Say something along the lines of that, but
Skype,
who cares?
Integrate. It's just, it's a
who
humble.
Who cares?
It's a humble attitude and acknowledging and then staying on fucking message. Go watch debates. Go watch Ronald Reagan. Go watch John F. Kennedy.
Yeah,
watch
that's what we want. That's exactly what we
if
want.
If you
want
to learn about messaging, go watch W. Bush. Staying on messaging and diverting. It's
yeah. What you why, what why, why what you why? Say is ultimately less important than how you say it to consumers.
Oftentimes.
I agree. Did you guys listen to the audio or did you just read the text?
I watched the video. I watched
him
do it.
I haven't watched it. So did he seem like an asshole in the video?
He came off pretty
smug.
Pretty smug to me.
Okay, well, I haven't seen the video.
A little more reviled even watching. I was like, he was like, it's like a ridiculous value. I'm like, looking, I'm like, dude, you can't sit here and sell me a premium. You wouldn't walk into.
I just don't understand the moral outrage. Like, I get, okay, you don't walk into
a car dealership to buy a nice car and have them sit there and go, this is a ridiculous price.
People don't like.
Actually,
people.
I've had that exact experience.
People don't like it
maybe
when
not
their
for a
intelligence
car. I don't know.
Is questioned.
Watch yes, Apple that, unveil their price. Their shit's always more expensive than a comparably equipped PC, but they present all this stuff and then they're like, and it's all
great example.
Here it is coming in at da da da. And it's like, it's all in how you say it. And
I'm not siding with this dude. I just think that I think maybe you brought something to reading the text that may not have been there. And
no, but
maybe
his
attitude in a lot of the other statements
the
we've
video.
Read is okay, I will. But a lot of the other statements we read I think were much more egregious than this particular one. So I think just highlighting this one is all I'm saying.
That thousands of dollars of value thing is just it was so absurd when it came out of his mouth and the way it came out of his mouth. I was like, that is ridiculous. There is not even in any of these machines, there's not thousands of dollars of value. There's the machine and then the games that you could play in it. And there's not thousands of dollars of value.
Yeah,
in
if
the
you
machine.
Want thousands
That's
of
ridiculous.
Dollars of value out of a gaming machine, get a PC.
Also, for the record,
exactly.
You're putting thousands of dollars into it.
I want to buy an Xbox One at some point. Just right now, Apple and Sony are the only ones that are paying me to be on this podcast.
Well, so. Good.
You shouldn't say that because people won't know you're joking. Be like, oh, of course, I knew it. Spicer, sell
whatever. More Twitter followers. Yeah.
More God. Money.
All right. I don't know. Enough of all that. Andrew, give me a couple of highlights of things that you saw at E3 that you really liked.
I really liked the Xbox One at E3. To be honest, I think my favorite games were Xbox One games. Titanfall was my game of the show, like hands down.
So how did that win your game of the show?
It's fun. It really plays so well. It's so intelligently designed. And for me, it didn't feel like they were giving me all these marketing bullet points where it's like, well, you know, with advanced dithering tessellation 2.0, you get, it's like, no, I just played the game and it was fun. I got to see other people play the game. I got to jump in and play with them and it was fun. And And the fact that the matches played out completely differently than what you might have saw, what you might have seen at, you know, EA's presentation or Xbox's presentation, and the fact that like it was intuitive and it felt different. It finally a game that doesn't, in spite of it coming from the guys that they call.
What do you mean it felt different? Like, I mean it looks different to watch, you know, the pilots like run wall jump and do double flips, but then it does sort of seem.
I mean, it's still a shooter. It's not creating a new genre, but it's as different from Call of Duty, you know, as say Last of Us is from Uncharted. There's a lot of the same DNA, but the way it's presented, and I think what Titanfall does really well is that you always feel capable and powerful. And so you feel powerful in the Titans. You feel powerful when you're on the ground. There's always so much to do. And the presentation is also terrific. I think when I first saw the presentation, I didn't know that it was exclusively multiplayer, you know? And the fact that they really get a lot of that presentation down adds a lot to it. And just the weapons feel good. The movement through the environment feels so good. Just being able to use your jetpack, being able to run on the walls, just being able to scale the environment really quickly. But it doesn't devolve into like something like, you know, Tribes or like UT2K4 with low grav mode or something like that, you know?
Because that would certainly seem to be like the big risk, right? Is once you introduce that amount of ability to locomote throughout the world, you know, get around throughout the environment in crazy ways, and it gets faster and faster, then you get to that like all of a sudden chaos mode.
Yeah, I mean, it's not so twitchy as say Call of Duty. You know, I would say it feels maybe slightly faster than like a Halo game, but. That's like the kind of balancing we're
and there is of. Really cool interaction between the pilots and the mechs.
Yeah, because... and so the way the pilots can take down mechs, the way mechs can take down pilots, everything just felt really balanced. And granted, you know, it's hard to know if it'll be super fun when you play, you know, for hundreds of hours. But
did you have a moment like the coolest moment I think out of the E3 game trailer where they're like the inside Titanfall thing is the very end of it where. The player is coming up to his Titan, and there's an enemy player on top of his Titan who's like trying to destroy it. Mm-hmm. And he like snipers that guy and then calls his Titan and then has his Titan pick him up. So it's like he's running up to his Titan. There's a dude up on top of the Titan. He like snipes him, punches a button, and gets grabbed by his Titan and jammed into the cockpit and goes running off. And
yeah,
I mean, that looks badass.
The fact that you can pretty much call Titans whenever you want, like really, it sort of changes the dynamic.
But there's a cooldown for him.
Yeah. It's not, you can't spam them.
Right.
But it's not as like, precious of a it's not a game changer, right? Where it's like, oh man, everyone is trying to compete for that one mech in the middle of the map, and
right.
You know, it's very different. The fact that, and there are actually a lot of advantages to not being in a Titan. So,
the thing they had to do was they had to make it to where there was a good dynamic to get you out of the Titan, or else everyone would just be like, oh, let's run for the big guys and go and bash our heads together.
So it's fun when you're in a Titan and you're fighting other Titans. It's fun when you're on ground fighting other ground troops. It's fun, like. I had so much fun with it, and I was just so shocked at how entertaining it was and how thoughtful it was, and once again, it's not like some PR guy was over my shoulder being like, well, make sure you pay attention to I don't even know what the bullet points are for this game, except for it has mechs and you shoot dudes, but what game doesn't really? it's the gameplay, the bullet point that you put on the game's fact sheet is fucking fun. That's the bullet point.
I think that
point.
Actually was their bullet point, because in their video that they reiterate that several times.
Okay, so maybe I'm drinking the Kool-Aid there, but it felt great.
It's so genius that they do. Somebody referred to them as popcorn enemies, where it's
Justin.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's so smart, man. It's so smart to
integrating
have
the AI into mixing it up with human characters. I think that's just really cool, and it sort of creates sort of a Assassin's Creed multiplayer vibe as well, where you know it's sort of fun just acting like your AI and then actually, you know, go in for a kill. So.
I just hope that there is a really fun story that unfolds over the course of the game, and that I'm doing different kinds of things.
I don't think so.
Well, they seem to indicate that's going to happen.
I mean, just from the way it's structured, it doesn't seem like they might build a universe, but I don't think there's going to be a narrative.
Well, they seem to indicate that, but
I don't know. But you know, like I said, I only played one level, so
and it's hard for me not to compare that with whatchamacallit, Bungie's game.
Destiny.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they're much different, though.
They're very different, but I don't know why.
Destiny seems much more story-driven.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of Destiny's ideas are really cool. Personally,
I mean, Destiny also has
much...
very grandiose, you know, aspirations for creation of this universe and long-term games. I mean, it's a multi-game deal, and they have, like, a very big idea about where they're going with that.
I never really got into Borderlands, and I'm getting a really strong Borderlands vibe out of it. So for me, I'm just
I'm on the exact... opposite end. Like, I think Titanfall looks cool, but I think Destiny, when they showed it and you saw the behind closed doors demo, it's about the same that you saw at the press conference with people actually playing, and then you see people are really playing, and I thought it looked great, and I don't know, I feel like it, I think Titanfall has done a good job, they've shown a good job of kind of balancing mechs and pilots, and you can play either way, but I'm just a little apprehensive of like, I'm going to suck at this game one way or the other, where I feel like Destiny has kind of given me the new Ubisoft game,
Division.
The Division. Like I kind of, Destiny's kind of given me this a little bit of vibe like that, where it's like, hey, we're together.
Yeah. No,
we're a little more co-op-y, and then, now we're killing each other.
Titanfall definitely seems like an e-sport kind of game.
What they've shown of it so far.
Versus Destiny, which seems like a much more crafted and a crafted experience. I do want to mention that the next game on my list was The Wonderful 101 for Wii.
Really?
So
awesome.
For some reason, I've missed every opportunity to play that.
That's why you weren't already up on it.
Yeah. So I was waiting for my Nintendo interview, and I'm like, oh, I can finally play this game. It is so amazing.
It's super fun.
And finally, a game that really uses
the gamepad.
Yeah. It's so good, and the title is so correct, and and multiplayer is so much fun because you...
So for anyone who hasn't already heard this, the catch to The Wonderful 101 is that you're the one, and you're with the 100 superheroes to save the world.
It's sort of like... it's similar to Pikmin, maybe, but it's an action game by Platinum.
In ways. I mean...
Yeah, in that you have a lead character and a lot of NPCs.
That you command through a variety of commands. But the commands that you use off the gamepad are...
So the way the commands work is just you draw symbols. So like a straight line will turn all your NPCs into a line, and then you'll turn into a giant sword, pretty much. And then you're just throwing... You're slashing at people, and there's just bodies flying around everywhere. It's really fascinating. You draw like a squiggly line and you turn into a whip, and the way you integrate that into battle is really fun. So you can draw the squiggly line, turn into a whip, and then rip off the armor of an enemy, and then draw like a sort of a seven shape in order to make a gun, and then shoot at like the weak point, and then.
But it's a gun made out of bodies of people.
Yeah, and so the bullets are people, yeah. and you're recruiting. You're just recruiting random people on the street where you're walking around and you're just like, you tap them with your stylus and just like, yeah, sure, I'll join you, hero. Throw me with reckless abandon.
It's really funny.
It has that completely over-the-top, zany Platinum charm. And it's fun using it on the gamepad.
It looked great before. I mean, I think the only disappointment about The Wonderful 101 is we all thought we'd be playing it a long time ago.
Yeah, I mean,
we were all pretty sure we'd been playing it a long time ago.
That's the kind of content that really should have been on Wii U a long time ago.
They needed it.
I think their upcoming library looks really strong.
But 2014.
It has for so long. 2014 is the bane of the Wii U's existence.
Yeah. I mean, Mario Kart 8 needed to come out this year.
Yeah.
But... And as great as Pikmin is, and to be honest, as fun as Mario 3D Land is, they needed something really strong like a Mario Kart or a Smash Brothers to be there.
Mario 3D Land's pretty damn good. I'm telling you, Cat Mario was definitely one of the big surprises for me, how fun that is.
I was a little skeptical, just being like, another quick Mario cash-in. I was thinking it would be like Mario, New Super Mario Bros. 2 on 3DS, which was
right. The
worst Mario game in recent time. But it does have flaws. I think multiplayer is not really well thought out because you have to stay so close to each other that if you don't have the same powers...
Still get the same frenemy thing going on, right?
It's really restrictive. It's not the frenemy thing where it's sort of fun to play tricks on someone else.
I think a lot of people do like that.
No, like I said, that element of isn't really there, though. It's just like really frustrating. It's like, well, I wanted to get that secret up there, but because you don't have a cat suit, I can't do it anymore. So I think it's definitely... one of the lesser polished Mario games. I'm sort of surprised it's coming from the Galaxy team because the Galaxy games are so great. It feels sort of like a B.
I'm not ready to go that far because I think that especially the cat Mario ability to crawl up the walls, just from what I saw and played around with, gives them a lot of opportunity to play with the game and have like a new change of element.
Yeah, but try doing that with four players.
It's problematic.
It falls apart. I do like the clear pipes.
The clear pipes are cool too. Yeah.
But it's sort of sad that we're talking about such granular changes in order to talk about innovation in the Mario franchise. I do miss when they used to come out like once or twice per generation, and they were
these, that's pretty valid.
These big deal events. And now it's like, it's Mario 2013. And next year it's going to be Mario 2014. And that makes it
I think
less
if they
exciting.
Came out and they were all awesome and like big mind-blowing things, I mean, that's it's damned if you do, damned if you don't. Like, we only got Sunshine on GameCube. We were like, we need another Mario. And now it's like, we're getting all these Marios. I think we've come to expect so much innovation that's the downside.
That franchise has become such a standard bearer that not living up to it becomes disappointing.
That's the problem. All the Wii U has are standard bearers.
Yeah.
Well, all the Wii had for a while was standard bearers as well.
I mean, I guess that is Nintendo's problem. Their games generally are too good.
their games are freaking awesome. Yeah. And Mario Kart was a blast. Yeah.
They innovated, and there's the argument that people are coming into this now. This is going to be someone's first Mario Kart. It's going to be someone's first Mario. Right. I understand that. But they innovated with all these new, fresh game ideas and then types.
It's frustrating to not see them make a new IP where it's like, hey, Nintendo, surprise us again, you know?
Yeah.
All right, so we have one last break when we come back. We'll do like a little more E3. We didn't talk any about Metal Gear Solid last week, so we should definitely
This last break will be the Last of Us for a week, so we should probably...
We'll also talk about some Last of Us. I know you guys are anxious. We just have to be very careful to not do any of the spoiler stuff.
God, it's still old news, guys.
I know.
God.
All right, stick around.
We beat that like 3 weeks ago. God.
We'll be right back after this. I thought it was time to bring back a little full on there. That was Thomas Schwartz. That's a disc called Distance that's coming out the second week in July. Heard that a little while ago on Above and Beyond's very, very awesome ABGT podcast, which you should listen to if you like trance. It's awesome. It's really good stuff. All right. So we were talking about like catching up on some things, including Metal Gear Solid, which we didn't talk about at all. Metal Gear Solid. How do we not talk about that? I mean, I think because the Konami thing was the week even before E3.
Yeah.
But after we had recorded that week.
And, well, they were in the press conference, and it looked really good, but they weren't showing anything at their booth or on the show floor other than that.
Right. So all we have to talk about is the trailer and the Kiefer announcement.
Yeah.
I mean, that trailer is amazing. I've played it.
I've played it
like a dozen times. I alternate between that and the Final Fantasy 15 trailer, and I'm
hard to argue.
I'm that 12-year-old kid like reading IGN all over again. So.
Konami promises it'll look better on PS4 and Xbox One, like than what they even showed. Like,
looks amazing.
It looked really
and I think
good.
The really cool part for me was that like they've done all the gritty part, and you like wondered about like where they're going with the series. But then by the end of that, when they've introduced all the other characters, you're like, oh yeah, that's the Metal Gear that like gets the Metal Gear going. You're like,
I love the theme song. The theme song. That's what sells it to me. It's a Snake Eater again. I'm so happy.
And any controversy over Kiefer? You guys good with Kiefer? The whole David Hayter thing? Do you buy into this whole thing of like it's a different snake and like
the
it's not?
Hayter will still be there.
Yeah.
Well, I don't put it past Konami, especially what they've been doing, or Kojima with this unveiling, to have this be a different snake entirely.
I mean, yeah. Let's not forget that this game was announced as a completely different game,
or have David
made
Hayter,
by a Swedish studio under.
Have Snake wake up at the end and be like, and the Hayter's voice like, it was all a dream.
I don't know if they'll go there.
I'd be so dumb, but I don't put anything past him at this point.
He wakes up and he's like, I really shouldn't have fallen asleep watching 24.
Yeah, and he's in the air vent looking at the girl. Like, I had to wait here forever to see her naked, like from Metal Gear Solid 1, and it all just goes full circle.
Okay, now that would actually be awesome. would be awesome.
Is that Naomi in the... I don't know,
that would be kind of awesome. But yeah, I mean, I think like people ask about it. So it's just a trailer and we only had the announcement. But I think the thing is that it was a really strong faith restoring or faith fortifying. Like, yeah, we all think Metal Gear is going to be amazing.
I mean, I never lost faith.
I don't think anyone lost. Yeah, that's why I didn't say reaffirming. I should say it's really just fortifying. It's
I think the excitement that I have for Metal Gear Solid 5 shows that, hey, not releasing a franchise every single year, actually,
not such a bad idea.
Yeah. I am
but
so...
Think of all those dollars that they didn't get you to pay for so long.
I am so ready for a new Metal... Like,
well, you're still playing Metal Gear Online.
Yeah, exactly. The servers were taken down a while ago. Sorry. But, no, like, after Metal Gear Solid 4, you know what? I was like, that was a great end to the franchise. And I'm a little sad to see Kojima forever stuck on making Metal Gear games. But you know what? That like, cynicism... It was like gone because I'm ready. I'm ready for a new Metal Gear game. They didn't wait quite long enough for like God of War or Gears of War, where it's like, yeah, I'm done. I don't need another one. It's like, well, here, have another one anyway. I was like, nah, it's all right. but Metal Gear, so ready for that.
You're gonna have to be ready for a while, right? I mean, we don't know when this is coming. I wouldn't be surprised if it's 25.
I'm gonna take a risk here. I think it'll be out before Kingdom Hearts 3.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah.
Is that a risk?
Christian, how about you? Any highlights from E3, or would you like to just like get on to The Last of Us?
I mean,
or both?
I think it was great. Just real quick, Infamous blew me away.
Yep,
from a studio.
Infamous really got a lot of people going.
That's my favorite awesome. PS4.
And new rumor of multiplayer being added to it.
I had heard that it had been in some development problem, but that was the rumor for Infamous 1, and Sucker Punch found a way to do that, and I'm excited for that.
That was my top PS4 exclusive.
Zelda DS. Sure. Played great, music was fun. I'm excited about that. And
you know, Ariel is like head over heels for that one because I mean that's new canonical like Zelda. Oh my god!
And that timeline is just so important to everyone.
And because it wouldn't be me without it, me mentioning the Vita. Killzone looked fantastic and played well on the Vita. Batman surprised me. I hope it's a little more Metroidvania than what they showed. But the combat I thought played really well. And Tearaway. I think Media Molecule might have finally found the cuteness in a game that I want to play.
I feel
and there
like
were so many other Vita games.
There were literally like a dozen. Million video games.
And
okay.
Then
okay, dozen million somewhere in between there.
And then I hope, and I don't think it will, but I hope that the streaming actually works from the PS4. I'm skeptical, but I hope that it actually works.
I feel like the only thing that kept Tearaway from being really seriously considered for Game of the Show was the platform. I really feel like the Vita's just lack of punch behind it anymore is the only thing that hamstrung that game, because that game is
Sony,
off the chart.
Yeah, Sony
but it's so
barely
wonderful.
Mentioned it at E3. You know, they had a huge Vita booth, but in terms of the press conference, it's like, oh, we have a Vita, please buy one.
It was Tearaway. Right.
It's so wonderful that it really highlights the strengths of that particular platform in that it plays in a way that really wouldn't work on a phone, it wouldn't work on a home console, plays
and hopefully stays that way throughout the length of the game. Maybe you get sick of it. You're like, oh, I'm using here's another drum section. But as a vertical slice for what they showed, it was amazing. My biggest surprise was Rise. I went thinking that was going to be bleh, here's this Kinect game or whatever. I think they showed it horribly.
You, sir, are an asshole.
I think they showed it horribly.
That's my line.
In the press conference. I think having the button prompts being as big as they are was horrible.
Did you play it?
I did. I played it, and I walked away saying, I will buy this when it's $40. So this was my biggest surprise. I was expecting to be like, this is the worst thing ever.
It's not the worst thing. I wish that I had known before I went and played it that you could not play it and it would still like play its way through to the end because of all the guys you were going along with you and all the scripted pieces. And that's not that it makes a big difference to me, but like the combat, I don't know. Just,
well, so I asked the guy, and that, you know, his answer was like, this isn't the final build,
right?
But I died 3 times and it didn't stop.
Yeah.
It just said you died. So
I don't even think it. To say it's,
anyway,
it's
like
just vertical slice. It's like right. that was one of those cases where they clearly put together something to show you different things that the game can do.
Correct. And like I said, it was my biggest surprise because I knew Forza 5 was going to be great. It was great. I was expecting a lot of great things, and Rise surprised.
Did you check out Fantasia?
No, but I heard that was a big mistake. I heard it was great.
It's freaking, it's Uendon. Done in it's
Uendon.
Uendon, sorry, it's Uendon. Ariel was correcting me about that too. She hates it when I do that. What's it? Elite Beat Agents, because I bought the import too. Like, it's Elite Beat Agents, which if you've never played on your DS is awesome, but done in 3D space with a Kinect. It's crazy.
By the guys that made Dance Central.
It's really crazy.
But
it's,
none of them impressed me as much as Last of Us. I love this game.
Oh, you do, don't you?
I am blown away.
All right, so we'll spend the rest of the time here. We can talk about some Last of Us without spoilers. I agree, but I want to hear what you're taking. I mean, I know you love it. My thing that we were talking about in the break is that I love it and I love the game and I like have like, you know, mass respect for it, a lot of good things to say, is that I don't know where I can position it in this generation's lists, because I think that it has some big broken parts.
Yeah, I don't know.
Let Christian go. We haven't heard him.
I know you both are a little further along than me, and so one, I want to say that this game has those problems, that similar problems to a game like Bioshock Infinite, which I thought was very okay, but then it fall head over heels with, like a lot of people did, where it's like it's building this real world, but there's still stupid video gamey shit in it. Like you craft the ability to hold your aim better. Like that shouldn't be crafting. That should be experience. That should be if you aim.
No, dude,
more.
you take pills.
Right, exactly.
Those are really good pills.
It's not there. I think it's better.
You guys
never
had aim pills before?
I think it's better. That's from Metal Gear. It helps you. It focuses you when you're sniping against Sniper Wolf. I think it is better than Infinite in the sense that the things you're finding around the world are a little more believable than a hot dog in a filing cabinet.
Like part of a Band-Aid.
Exactly.
Half
of a Band-Aid and half of a bottle of cleaner that makes health kit. It has those.
But I'll say this.
Problems.
No, I thought that was cool. I'm
it has those problems. But
the character engagement for me is a level above almost any game I can play, because oftentimes I'll like bring in notes and like stuff. From maybe the first time that I ever played the game, like I knew Joel and Ellie. I was like completely attached to them.
That is where they're working on a level that very, very few video game companies are working. And they just get better and better. Yeah. And the story and the presentation of the story and the acting and how all of that is done is at such a high level and is so engaging.
I mean, Booker and
so
Elizabeth
fun.
Were good, but Booker and Elizabeth are not even in the same.
Yeah, they feel like real people in a real place doing a real thing.
And so
here's my criticism, though.
Hold on, loves real quick. Loves the way exploration doesn't always pay off. It's you go into a house to get something. There might not. So many other games like Bioshock, Jack. Oh, I'm going to go here and get all this shit. I'm going to go here and get all this shit. Borderlands. I'm going to go here and get all this shit. It's like, do I want to go in there? I don't know if I want to go. I only have a few bullets. What is in? There's a note. Great, I read a note. That note means, oh, great, now I lost like 8 bullets in half my life. That was a waste. And the tension, like, I hate playing the game because I'm like, oh, tense the whole time. It's like a good book. I don't want it to end. This is the only game I've played in a long time where I find myself walking, even though I have the ability to run. The first time I saw the paint peeling off the walls, the dialogue during the actual gameplay works out well. And I know some of these things are just unique that happened to me, but I was in a part of the game where I'm doing something and I just literally finished searching this room for knickknacks or whatever.
Patty Wax gave your dog a bone.
And Ellie comes over and is like, hey, do you have time to talk? And I'm like, not right now, which was the exact moment when I was like going to go, you know, fuck shit up. And I was like, no, that worked out perfectly for me. And so there's been little things like that maybe didn't happen to everybody. And I hear the AI gets bunked or whatever, but like I had such a great experience where the animation just worked out perfect, where I thought I was screwed. I hit a wall, start turning to get ready to run away from clickers, and I find a bottle, and it was all smooth, like my thumb rolling over, picking up this thing with my actual hands, and then watching Joel in-game, picks up this bottle, mid-turn, throws it. The clicker is probably should have seen me in real life, but like in one video game step would have seen me. The bottle hits, and the clicker pivots and turns away, and I run out the door and make it, and it was just like, this.
I love hearing you talk
and
like
I know
this.
It was unique to me, but
the other thing that they do very, very well, especially is especially surprising for a company that made, you know, Nathan Drake games, is they managed to find a way to make traversal really interesting when you're not Nathan Drake, when you're not a Superman who can scale walls, when you are just an average dude who needs a friggin' ladder. I mean, you're playing ladders and planks half this game, but the idea
that
getting around this world is still fun and interesting.
And it makes sense that those things would be there.
Right. And
because
I mean,
people had been using that to get
this game is the endorsement.
There is still some of that shit. I agree.
Yeah.
I'll tell you this. This game is the endorsement for what Tomb Raider could have been.
That's a whole different conversation.
I'm not saying in combat. I'm saying in beautiful, rich environment invites you to explore it and you enjoy the experience of exploring it.
No, there's a runner over there. Don't explore over there.
Okay. Well, let's not.
But we can talk
about that in a second. Let's stay focused on this particular game, because I'm
amazed by it on so many levels, the density of the world, the reality of the reality that I'm in.
The reality of the reality. And, what condition my condition was in.
Yeah. And but I will have to say, I have to say that I have been a little bit disappointed that it isn't the game that I thought it was. And that's on me for having an expectation, but it really isn't the game that they, I think, made it seem to be. Which is funny because
exactly what you said. So for me, it's exactly the game that I thought it would be, and I thought they completely delivered on that. So I'm curious to see what the schism is here.
This is a third-person action game.
Yeah.
Where I'm killing masses of people and creatures in order to get from place to place. And that's fun. I'm enjoying the game, but I didn't think I thought I was going to play the video game version of The Road. I thought that I was going to find a gun with one bullet in it and have that for long stretches of time and wonder whether I should use this bullet or not.
And if ever there was a game that didn't need its combat but actually also feels drawn down by it, it's this game.
Yeah, I'm never without bullets. I always have multiple weapons on me, and I feel like anything other than just slaughter everything.
And way more gunplay than I wanted it to have, but especially I find...
Oh, you're agreeing with me.
Oh, I totally agree with you. I 1,000% agree with you. I cannot stand, like, some of the things I really find frustrating is that the game does not communicate to you as the player. And I guess it couldn't, because if it did, it would remove some of the tension. But it doesn't communicate to you when it is sealing you off and saying, player, to
you have to kill everybody. Yeah.
Versus, player, you know what?
All that sneak stealth by them.
You could actually sneak by all these.
Yeah.
Because in reality, what I wanted to do is, if it's really going to sell out for all of this, is I want to be able to get through this entire environment, through everything, sneaking all the time, picking up just a few things here and there, not needing to go scavenge for every bullet, but like still wanting to scavenge, right? And choosing those spots really carefully, but it doesn't do that at all. And the worst degradation for me of that is the entirety of how the infected are incorporated into the game. The infected are nothing other than combat drones, and they are even like segmented into three or four different types, and they all have their little purpose that they serve in the combat scenarios. And every time you're dropped into an infected situation, it is just a battle arena, and it's a battle arena for you to solve. And yeah, from a game standpoint, there are people who love it because they give you lots of tools, there's lots of fun ways to approach it, but it's not serving the greater purpose of the Joel and Ellie quest story the way it could have.
It's exactly, I think, a lot of the criticism that people had for Uncharted 3, which was story, battle arena, story, battle arena. Here, I feel like at a certain point, it gets relentless. It's literally battle arena, battle arena, battle arena, battle arena. And I get fatigued. And I really want to feel free to, explore. I mean, I love the oppressive nature of the environment and feeling like, around every corner there could be danger. That's interesting and tension filled, as you said, Christian. But
I wish there was more of that.
At a certain point, like, I wish I could not be a one-man slaughtering machine. And I feel like there really isn't any incentive for me not to kill everything in my path.
Well, and for all the talk about it, Joel, by the way, is once again the amazing death machine.
Yeah.
And that was a little disappointing to me. And so here's the thing. The other way it breaks down to me is that you've got two traditional enemy types in here.
Wait, so
you've
got time out. Just a real. So what difficulty are you guys playing on?
Normal.
Okay.
So. Does that change in?
Well, I mean, because I only played on a hard and survivor mode, so I have no experience with the game on normal at all,
which
so.
Probably makes it even more challenging.
I'm wondering if ammo is more scarce in those modes or anything. Because I feel like I'm always have tons of weaponry on me.
How often do you die?
Fairly often. One of my biggest pet peeves with this game, by the way, is it's rampant in all the Naughty Dog games, and I hate it. But when you're fighting humans and you're in a fist fight with someone, and some dude is just popping shots at you and his buddy, like wildly shooting at you in a fist fight that is chaotic and he could easily kill his friend.
But he
hits you every time.
He's not his buddy.
Like, he's across the room firing a shotgun as you're engaged in fisticuffs with a guy. Like, it just breaks the illusion for me.
So I usually love
you don't really get punished that much when you die in this game.
No, not
and, yeah, the checkpointing system is excellent.
Well, so I usually like that, and while games like Demon's Souls and Dark Souls, they really stress me out in the way I don't like, I think that this game maybe could have walked that line a little different, because then I think you'd go into those situations a little more strategically, where you'd be like, okay, I'm going to sneak here, I'm going to set this exploding can here, I'm going to, you know, do this here, and I'm going to sneak around here, because then if you died, it'd set you back. But it doesn't punish you to be like, run in! Oh, my dad. Okay, let me just do that again. And so...
But I just wish the game wasn't about that so much. I wish it wasn't like, here's a bunch of people out to kill you. They are all very well armed, as are you, and one of you will die and one of you will not. And I was under the assumption that the game was working, that as we ramped up to this Last of Us thing, it really was going to deliver on that promise of a game where the central motif wasn't about kill or be killed. It was about survival. And those are maybe two sides of the same coin.
Did you beat the game? Or
I haven't. So I haven't finished it.
Yeah,
so
how far are you into it right now?
He's halfway into Pittsburgh.
Okay, so it's still really early.
Still early.
Okay.
And yeah. I'm done with Pittsburgh.
I thought
Pittsburgh was Atlanta.
I do want to say that I agree with a lot of what you're saying. Even on the hardest difficulties, I felt like I wish it were even harder. I still think the game is too easy. Like, you know,
it's not about easy or hard. It's more about
the way I played it. Okay, it's like literally like I would wait in a room for like 10 minutes and then like wait for the right opportunity to like oppose, like
to
and,
slaughter and, everyone.
No, to like find a way out. You know,
they're combat.
Yeah, because like for me, I felt like the game had trained me to like try to avoid every combat situation that you can, because if you get spotted, you are going to die. And yeah, there are unavoidable combat situations that you want to be prepared. You want to make sure you have all the, because like if you only have one, if you have two shivs and I want to waste that one shiv on that secret door that has all the,
of course,
the secrets in it, you know,
yeah.
And I still want to have one shiv left, you know? So for me, it's like, you know, I really want to make sure that I'm prepared for those fights, you know? And I hate those fights. I hate the stupid boss fight.
Boss fights in this game. I didn't think there would be a game with boss fights. I thought we would be in a game with no boss fights.
Well, let me ask you this then, Jeff. Is this your favorite game ever or the best game ever?
Are you being... What are you saying?
Just answer the question. Can we stay on message?
But the thing is, I wish there was less combat, but I love the combat. So I think I might disagree with you on that, Garnett.
So I like the combat with I think there's too much combat for the game, for the narrative service. Playing the game, I enjoy the combat against the humans because I think the humans are really fun to fight.
Yeah.
I think the infected are a mess. I think they're not fun to play against. I think it highlights the clunkiness of the control system. I'm so sick of pressing triangle to shiv a clicker and it not registering the damn thing.
You really shouldn't be shivving clickers in general, so I'll just throw that out there.
Works great. That's awesome.
There's like these techniques that like you start relying on, and then you have to like learn to abandon.
I hope my opinion changes.
Well, I don't like a game that teaches me something that works and then tells me.
The great thing about The Last of Us, it doesn't teach you anything, right? You just sort of learn like, oh, this is what works for now, and then you make mistakes and then you learn different strategies. I will say that clickers become less important later on in the story, so I'll just throw that out there. And I do think that the game poses an interesting question on the role of violence and I think ultimately frames your actions in what you do in an interesting way. So I think we'll be talking lots more about this game. The combat piece,
the next thing after clickers are these hunters, and the hunters, like, they ignore stealth entirely because no matter how nicely you sneak up on them, they have eyes in the back of their head and automatically see you, which is kind of ridiculous.
I haven't experienced that.
You haven't gotten to the hunters yet. You haven't gotten to the ones I'm talking about.
Okay.
Trust me. You'll recognize them because you'll have snuck up behind them perfectly, and then they'll see you regardless.
Okay.
Well, because... Yeah, I mean, they don't see, they hear, so...
Because they're magic.
Even
when you're sneaking.
But
here's my... Okay,
that's where equipment becomes really important.
So for listeners that maybe are on the fence, haven't checked it out, Jeff and Garnett, do you guys like this game? Would you recommend it?
Very much. It's an experience just purely to be in that place and and experience these characters and see the storytelling on display, I really, really, really like the game. It's just not the game I thought it was going to be. And
I do think that perhaps playing it on normal is something that is a disservice.
Well, I would play it on easy. I mean, I'm so over the combat. I mean, I think the
thing is, like, it's not about engaging combat often. It's about, like, making sure that combat is something that is so deadly and stressful that you want.
I just wish that this game was more than just you need to get from here to there and there's a bunch of bad guys in between. I wanted there to be something else to it. So what
did you think that something else might have been? I just want to know.
Well, I mean,
I have an answer for that.
I like the traversal bits. I like the figuring out how to get from here to there. Mm-hmm, I'm mm-hmm. swimming around. I'm trying to figure out what, you know. Mm-hmm.
I love the swimming in this game.
Oh, it's great.
Yeah, the swimming is although oddly
the dude has a terrible breath.
Well, you know, given what he's been
that's
through.
That's true. He's probably asthmatic.
All those spores in there. You
that's
know?
Right. But no, I love all that stuff. I wanted it to feel, I mean, I read the book, The Road. I watched the film. It's one of my favorite books. Mm-hmm. It is a very powerful reading experience. And what that book is about is, trying to protect someone through horrific experiences without engaging anyone in anything. But times you even meet any bad guys in that book is rare.
Thematically, it is not The Road.
Right.
So thematically, it's I don't want to say anything.
It didn't need to be The Road, but I wanted the verisimilitude of really being there in the moment. And there are too many pieces that take me away from that. There are too many pieces that do that. And because of what they did, which was they went down a more traditional design. Like I was saying, there's two enemies. You've got the clickers who serve this sort of, you know, one sort of combat scenario. And then you've got the, you know, the bandits who serve a whole other sort of combat scenario. And I think they're quite fun to play against. I mean, I find
those the humans.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I find messing with the human survivors, that's a tremendously fun combat experience for me. I don't know that it fits
they
all the time.
They feel very smart.
But and, I think,
yeah,
I think the missed opportunity here was that the act of survival could have been an equal partner as an enemy. Trying to survive in this world could have been an enemy. And
like getting food, getting
where is that you hit it in the nail on the head. Where is food and starvation? And I think that like Christian, you talk about like going around all these
that's
places
what the
and
road is about.
Everything.
The book of The Road is food is the most important thing in the world and how do we get it?
And in that book, one of the lessons that could have been taken away from this is that you explore a lot of these places and they're already picked over and there's nothing there.
Right. And then when they
and
find
you go through all
spoilers,
of
spoilers, but when they find some food in there, it is like this most glorious.
It's heaven.
Yeah. And
yeah,
that
I guess,
could
yeah.
have been the game.
Yeah. For me, I wasn't expecting that at all. So.
And here it's like, I don't worry about anything because I know what everyone's going to have left plenty of broken scissors around. There's going to be tons of broken scissors and gauze pads and alcohol.
I do think that perhaps I should play the game on normal just to see what the item drops are like and, you know, what the balancing is like. But for me, you know, I just thought, maybe my review is incomplete because I never played it on normal.
No, but it's a fair opinion.
Everybody's opinion is equally valid. I think that to me, though, like, that would have brought in more of the I already think exploring the world is awesome. I think it could have been even more awesome because I think if it had been more desolate and more empty and yet more rich, I mean, it could still be rich and furnished and be all of those things and have that like tension hanging over you. And then every time something happened, it would be that much more momentous and it could still have a similar sort of pacing it has. And I think you could still bring in some of the combat pieces. It's just that
I've brought this up several times too before, but also, and I think even last week, but in comparison to The Walking Dead Telltale game, which of course, very different kind of game, but the moment where you have to decide who eats and who doesn't eat is a tremendously powerful video game moment because it's interactive. I'm making the decision and there are consequences and it has nothing to do with destroying an enemy or getting past an enemy. It's the environment caused this terrible decision to be made, and I, as the player, have to make that decision.
Right? I will say that, yeah, The Last of Us is not a game about choice. It is definitely something that a narrator, a writer...
It's telling a story.
Yeah, has a very clear intent in...
And I can't wait to see how it all...
All right, so we've got more time. You'll see it, and I'm sure we'll possibly come back. I have a feeling that Last of Us may wind up being one that we want to ultimately do like a spoiler cast on at the end of a show, but that'll be... That'll be down the road in a few weeks or so. We're going to wrap this one up. It is time for finishing moves.
It's the weekend, and it's time for finishing moves.
Hey, Christian, how about you strike up the band?
Certainly. So after this Xbox 180, Cliff Bleszinski was tweeting some things, and he by no means knows me. I've met him a couple of times. I think he's a wonderful human being who's done some great things for gaming. I think the things he was tweeting and saying about how used games, you know, are ruining gaming, and other people had been expressing the same sentiment. Shut up. Used games aren't the problem, and if gaming can't be sustained based on this model, I don't care. Fix your fucking model. Oh, movies won't exist if we break the studio system. We need the studio system so we can have... Nope, change your system. Baseball, we need to have these players locked forever. No, you don't. And if you can't make it work in a way that consumers are happy about, then go the fuck home. I don't need that bullshit that it's my fault as the consumer doing things. Does GameStop do some
in
really...
In his defense, he did go home. He's at home.
He's at home.
He doesn't have a job.
A beautiful, wonderful home. Does GameStop do some stupid, shitty stuff also? They do, and I'm not championing. There it is. And I'm not supporting them, and I'm not backing saying rah-rah GameStop, but stop it. If your system is broken in the way that we want to consume it, that's your system's fault, and someone else will come along. This is America or Poland, wherever game developers are, they will find a new way. They will make great new games, and you'll have games like The Witcher that come out that don't need to rely on this DRM crap, and people will find ways to make great games that I will continue to love to play. My hobby is safe. If you can't make it work for you, that's your fault. And the question for the listeners, because there's been shit on it on boards, what is your ideal? It's a totally different change of pace, but what's your ideal launch? What makes a good launch to you? What kind of exclusives do you want? How many games do you need? What's a great launch? What are you excited about? And shut the fuck up about used games. That's all I have.
Jeff, bring us some happiness.
Wow. Well, first of all, the announcement just happened recently of the schedule for PAX Australia, and I'm on it. I will be there. If you're in the jolly old land of Oz right now, and you're listening to this, I hope you're going to PAX Australia, because I'm going to be doing a panel there on Sunday at 4:30. So please, I hope to see you there. And I think we're also doing a meetup of some kind, but that's TBD. But what I really wanted to say is, this has been a crazy week with a lot of crazy things happening and a lot of crazy name calling at me personally and lots of other people, and a lot of outrage, justified and you know, overblown both. Before I came here, the last thing I did before I came here to record this today was the thing I often do is I was watching, eating lunch and watching Colbert Report. And it happened to be the Colbert Report from last night where Stephen Colbert's mother passed away, and he started the show with a really, really beautiful tribute to his mother. And it brought a tear to my eye, and it made me admire him even more. And one of the things he said about his mother was that she lived every day without bitterness. And I strive to do the same. And I would put out to you, dear listener, that we all have the ability to put things out into the world now with this glorious technology called the internet. And the things we put out into the world have effect. And they have effect both on people and on the climate and on the culture. And I would urge you, as upset as you can be and as justifiably impassioned as you can be about issues, great and small, to be conscious of what you put out into the world and to try to make the world a better place. And I think that that's all I want to say.
Well, I was going to talk about some clouds.
And, go for it.
And pretty things. And, you know, I feel like Charlie Brown following that one up.
I'm just trying to say that
those heavy. It's good.
I don't mean it to be heavy. I just mean it to be, you know, tone goes a long way. You know, things can be said and we can be civil. And there's a civility that I mourn the loss of.
I appreciate the sentiment. I am surprised it took as long as it did for me to play the game that I played this week, which is a MOBA on my iPad. It's called Solstice Arena, and more surprisingly, it's being published by Zynga. But it's not just being published by Zynga, it's actually being made by a studio that they purchased last year. That would be the group called A Bit Lucky, which is made up was founded by a couple of ex-Trion folks. Now, the thing about this is that they really actually pretty much pulled off a great MOBA on iPad. I don't know how you would play it on iPhone. I have it on my iPhone, but I haven't really pulled it up. I mean, it just seems like the screen real estate would be too small. They went 3-on-3. It has great, it has good bots to play against with multiple levels. But I mean, and if you played League of Legends, you know how the system works. They followed all of the normal structural pieces.
Tapping furiously?
No, you play it just like you would with a Diablo game. So you start with your three heroes in their stand at the left, and then you put your finger on the ground where you want them to go. You can use the drag just like any. Oh God, what was the game? My name is dying. My head is not
okay.
It's not. What was the
Hero Academy iOS game?
I don't know.
You need to give us a hint.
Infinity Blade Dungeons.
I'm tapping the
Infinity Blade Dungeons. Did you ever play Infinity Blade Dungeons?
No.
Okay, so the way they had solved the Diablo game problem was that you drug your finger along the surface of the ground where you wanted your player to move, and then you tapped on the enemies that you wanted to tap, and then you would attack them automatically until you tapped something else. And it works on the exact same system. So if you're playing a ranged character and you want to go attack the hero that's over here on the right, you just tap him, you'll move into range, and then you'll start firing your whatever your range attack is. If you're a melee, then you'll close and melee attack. But what's cool about this is that they really streamlined it and thought about how it would play in a mobile game. So there's no mobs, which some people will be like, oh, well, then how do you play the game? Well, so the game is entirely focused on the combat between the three heroes. So it's always hero on hero combat, which is kind of cool. Has a good itemization system. It's
Towers?
There are towers. There are three towers, and you still have to do the tower system. But one of the dynamics that's kind of cool is that the towers go into shutdown mode when none of the defending team's players are in the field. So if the defending team players are either killed or are back on their platform using the item shop, then the towers are rendered powerless, and
so
you can
have to wipe
attack.
Everybody out before you can attack the
tower. You don't have to wipe them all out, but if you can get them crippled or especially get them into a retreat mode, then you can probably get them where they're pulling back and have to like go back at least to their platform, or at least lose a couple guys and go back to their platform, at which time you can get in some good attacks on those towers. Right? You can still tower rush. You can still do a power tower rush and, you know, not sacrifice all your guys, especially if you have a healer in there. So it does. Anyway, it follows the same normal pattern of different heroes available each week, but they also level up and they have like cool skills that you can apply to that each of them has like three primary powers, and they have three attributes to those powers. And as you level up, you can improve those attributes, but you won't be able to improve all of them all the way up. So you can kind of like tailor, like, say you're playing an archer who has like a fire shot. You could increase the damage of the fire shot, increase the range of the fire shot, or decrease the cooldown as you level up. So you can kind of tailor to how you want to play. I think it's really well put together. It makes for a good
fast...
How much
is it? Free?
It's free to play.
Cool.
It's, of course, free to play. It's called Solstice Arena.
Cool.
And it's Zynga moving into midcore. Like, I actually really quite a well-polished and put-together MOBA that plays really quite well. It's pretty fun.
Check it out.
Andrew, you get to bring it home.
Let's see. I'll start with something positive, which is the Horizon press conference. I'd like... thank everyone that organized it. It was billed as an indie alternative to E3. It took place on the last day of E3. And there was some pretty big news there. They announced Fez 2. They announced a new game from Robin Haneke and Keita Takahashi of Katamari Damacy fame and Nobi Nobi fame. And they even announced a few new games from Double Fine, Tim Schafer studio. And showed off more of Below, the new Cappy game for Xbox One. So it was an amazing event, just being able to see all these smaller games get the attention that they should deserve in a format that was very respectful.
At the big stage.
Yeah, I really, really hope that they do it again next year and that it becomes a regular thing, because we need to be talking about these kinds of games more often, all the time, really. That's the only thing we should be talking about. Now, in terms of being negative, you guys...
You don't have to do both.
You earned it. You go crazy.
You just reminded me that I... Uncharted 3...
Oh, God. Don't do it.
No, no.
Don't jump under the bus.
I'm doing it. No, it is... I've concluded that when I first played Uncharted 3, I was like, yeah, this is definitely the worst of the Uncharted series. After playing it again, because it went free-to-play on PlayStation Plus, No, it's actually a bad game. I do think it's actually like if we at Shaq used numbers, it wouldn't have a very high number. But
well, I think if you gave it that, I think you'd no longer be at Shaq.
I think so. Yeah. I mean, it's really funny that you're reacting that way because the problems that I have with Uncharted are the ones that you specifically point out for The Last of Us. So I really hate how there's completely unavoidable fight sequences.
But
the way that they,
but it's Uncharted, like it doesn't pretend to be something more.
No, the thing is Uncharted 2 wasn't like that though. Uncharted 2, the way they handle spawning and gating and AI was completely different. At least
Last of Us spawns dudes in just out of thin air.
Yeah, and the thing is the few times that The Last of Us does it is egregious. You know, when I don't know if you've come to that one point yet.
I don't want to hear it.
But there is a point where it literally spawns enemies and you're just like,
fuck you.
What the hell?
Can we agree on this though? Naughty Dog with PS4 hardware. Oh, I cannot wait to see how pretty those games are.
And I just hope it's not an Uncharted game.
It will be.
Oh, okay. You have stirred. He has stoked the fires.
How
there,
dare you, sir. How dare you?
That's Andrew Yoon. You can catch up with him at 573 Broad Street in Los Angeles. Just kidding.
I feel bad for whoever's at 573 Broad Street.
Oh my God, they're out there. There could be brought pitchforks. All right, everybody, thanks very much. Big thanks, of course, to Micah and Del Rio and everybody here at the Atlantis Group for hosting us once again, as they do every week. Christian Spicer, you can catch up with at Spicer on Twitter. Any upcoming shows or stuff you want to promote?
I'm at UCB the first Thursday of every month in Los Angeles, and Double Jump for the Nerdist channel is coming. We appreciate your patience. We're really excited about it. We have some really good stuff coming out soon.
Mr. Jeff Cannata, besides heading to Australia for PAX Australia, anything you want to tell us about?
I already mentioned Always On, Double Jump.
All right.
Follow me on Twitter at Jeff Cannata. And thanks. You know, honestly, thanks for all the feedback, guys. And those of you who do so with reason and respect and all that stuff, it's super appreciated. And I love having my opinions challenged. So thanks.
Andrew, Shaq stuff coming up we should be looking out for?
Let's see. We have a Company of Heroes 2 review coming out next week.
I'm psyched for that game.
I'm excited to read the review, man. Super.
I know you're not a strategy guy. I am super pumped for that game, especially after being playing the beta, which they extended through Sunday. So it's really good. It's really, really, really good. I really like it. All right, folks, that's it. And we will be back next week, and then we're getting ready for 4th of July. We're going to do we're going to do a little early show 4th of July. If you guys have any suggestions.
We're just going to sing the national anthem for 2 hours.
Right? Yeah.
That's the plan?
That's the plan. Cool. That is exactly the plan. And that's God Bless America, right? That's the national anthem. That's how it works. It's baseball, right? Anyway, that's your Weekend Confirmed. We are Ghost. Get real. Take it out. They said I never made it, they call me Zip Zero. But now I'm a lieutenant in this hip hop bureau. There was a time when I was riding the line, but then they called my number and I'm ready to shine. I sit back, relax, ready to go. Put a little swag with my sick ass flow. Now I rock the stages and I do it with ease. For blowing up from promoters overseas. This episode of Weekend Confirmed is brought to you by the Gamefly app, the must-have app for gamers, with info on over 50,000 console, handheld, iOS, and PC games. Get the Gamefly app for free today on your iPhone, iPad, and Android devices.